Good morning, everybody. I hope your Friday is off to an awesome start. We are live, the Gareth Cliff Show on The Real Network, and it's heading steadily towards the weekend. So if you woke up early this morning and you're ready to attack the day with both hands, was it the mayor of Cape Town? It was a guy, I think it was. There was this dude who didn't eventually get involved in sports somehow.
Mayor of Cape Town?
Yeah. He used to be for a little while. Or he was Premier of the Western Cape, I can't remember. Anyway, someone asked him at a press conference, like, how do you feel? And he went, with my hands.
Wow, I've never...
That's so great. You have to find that somewhere. Got to find that clip. All right, I'll try and remember who it was as well. But yeah, that was his honest answer.
Because that would be quite funny as well for the ANC. So like, how do you steal?
With my hands. Morning, Ben.
Oh, how do you abuse with Andrew's case?
Oh, my God. So they arrested Prince Andrew. Well, he's not Prince Andrew. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. They arrested him at his little... He was trying to hide out. And they sent 6 cop vehicles to get him. They thought he was going to do a runner.
An old woman with a Maltese poodle could have rounded him up.
Well, exactly. He's 66. It was his birthday.
That's a bit much.
Andrew is a... You can imagine.
Why is he playing Twister with that girl on the top left?
Well, that was the Epstein photo. That's supposedly like one of these girls could be Victoria Jufri or whatever she is. But you can see that's a young
Victoria Jufri's testament fell to pieces, though.
Yeah, it did. It did. But, you know, they need scapegoats because Epstein's dead, right? People are saying that's not Ghislaine Maxwell in the video that she released because they're taking stills and they're comparing. You know, all the conspiracy theorists are face-to-face and they're like, nah, it's not Ghislaine. Epstein's not dead. So we need someone to blame, right?
And it's always the one who is the weakest.
Well, it's also the one who's
fruit.
The one that can get the highest up the tree. And, you know, if your brother's the king, you're quite high up the tree. So Andrew's the guy. Anyway, they burst into his place in Sandringham, Wood Farm or whatever it's called. And I try to imagine... Because Andrew only wakes up. They came to his house at like 10. He probably only wakes up at like 9:45. So he must have been in his pajamas ordering servants around. You know, even though he's scaled down considerably since he's been in disgrace. Servant. He's got at least one. Where are my clothes, valet? And then his people said, well, there are a bunch of police cars. And he went, it's time to do a runner. Someone grab Fergie out of the cellar. We got to go. Now, of course, they got to arrest her as well because she was bosom buddies with Epstein. Didn't she take the girls there after he had been released from prison?
But that's just because she needs bread and lodgings.
Yeah, she really does, eh?
You know, there's no crime in that other than just being dodgy.
Bread and lodgings. She offered to be his housekeeper.
I bet.
Epstein. No, in the emails. Listen, these emails are hilarious. So Fergie offered to be the housekeeper for Epstein because she said, because I really need the money. It's so embarrassing.
There really wasn't a plan B here after being a royal.
No, there's no. They don't have a plan B. No, there's no way. All right, well, the comments section's alive and well. Who's going to be the king of the comments section this morning? It looks at this
Andrew.
Point. Andrew. Prince Andrew. How nice to see you in the comments section. Gareth, you can't be calling them conspiracy theorists anymore. They've been right too many times. Yeah, but, you know, just because people – a broken clock is right twice a day.
But not 4 times a day, though.
Yeah, but I've been pulled into the rabbit hole in so many of these things. And then at some point you realize, like, you told me to listen to that film director.
It was coming.
I listened to him after the show on Friday, and I kept going. I thought, well, you know, Ben's not an asshole. He won't – suggest someone who's a complete fucking nutcase.
I hadn't heard
this
guy. Podcast yet.
He was 2 seconds away from Bigfoot, no moon landings.
Oh, he wants.
He says the Earth is flat.
He wants to have a bash of flat earthing about an hour in. Look, the thing with that is like I look at conspiracy theories and I think those people. I look at it like reps for your brain. You don't have to believe them, but it makes you think in a certain way where you think about, okay, my mind hasn't gone to that point. Bullshit's worth looking at, and it's like a rep.
Well. I listened to the whole thing.
The whole thing?
And then because I thought, well, this is Ben's recommendation. There must be some gold here.
But I even then told you, like, I'm also struggling.
No, you told me after I'd told you, you'd wasted my whole fucking day.
It was a 2-hour podcast.
I listened to the whole thing, and I kept waiting. I thought, well, this guy's worked with Tarantino. He can't be that wacky.
But it also reminds you of how shit people are in Hollywood and in that general scene. Huh? They are such... I mean, like he said, he's a provocateur. He likes to spread things. He likes to challenge things. But there was just nothing... It was nothing interesting about him.
He's a very stupid person.
There was just nothing fundamentally good about the guy as a storyteller even, which was most
surprising. What was his name so that people know who we're talking about here? Because I don't want to be... defaming
something Avery, and he's been on Joe Rogan a few times.
Okay, yeah. Well, look, again, Rogan is great at doing this. I don't know anything. Tell me stuff, and you can do that with anybody because you're bound to find something. I mean, you've been in the studio with me. Sometimes we get a guest every 10,000 people who's absolute shit, but you still find one or two things in there.
That's what I always believe. You can learn something from anybody.
So that's where I held the fort. I thought, but it's the world's number one podcast. It's got millions of people listening. Ben recommended it.
You keep going back to that.
You sold me such a turd.
I was sold headlines. I was sold headlines. I take it all back.
Oh my
God. Last week wasn't my finest show, Gareth. Everyone's in 10,000 shows, you get an absolute turd from
me. Exactly. You gave me a turd. By the way, speaking of which, you have got to hear this. This is the funniest story. This guy, his wife was apparently like a real boozer. Mm-hmm. She would go out with her girls every Friday and Saturday.
Local guy.
Hammer pissed, yeah.
The guy in the comments.
It's probably someone in the comments section for all we know. And you know how he stopped his wife from going out and embarrassing herself every week? So the one night she called him and said, no, darling, I'm going to be a bit late. I'm out with the girls, chardonnaying it up.
We all know these girls at some stage in our life.
And then she arrived very bedraggled and very fucked up at home. And he put her to bed. She was really like gone, paralytic. And then he went outside and he took a shit right next to her car. And he told her she'd done it. And she believed him. And so she stopped drinking there and then. And that's he told amazing. Her the neighbors watched her do it. So she's avoiding the neighbors as well.
That is brilliant.
Oh, my God. All right. So Slippery Pickle says on the subject of... conspiracy theories. The more horse dewormer you take, the more appealing Joe Rogan becomes. Haven't had any ivermectin, Gareth. Listen, I think Joe Rogan does some interesting shows. When he comes to like ancient aliens and these wild ideas, listen, there may be a little bit of truth to every conspiracy theory. That's what makes them plausible. But that doesn't mean that they should all be taken seriously. There are some that I would say yes. I mean... One of my recurring nightmares is
9/11.
No, it's how stupid people were during COVID, and I can't shake that. And nobody has to.
But that really wasn't a conspiracy, was it?
Here's our friend Jonathan Witt, who said something so true this week. Because in America now, they're talking about an affordability crisis, right? That's what the Democrats in America are campaigning on, is an affordability crisis, because they say, well, people can't afford, everything's so expensive. Where does this come from? And this is not a conspiracy theorist on his part, theory on his part, but he points out very accurately, I should think, that this is precisely why we're dealing with expensive stuff in markets all over the world. This is it. Have you got his tweet there? Nobody wants to admit this or be honest about it, but the actual price everyone paid for the utter stupidity of the COVID era was that monetary supply doubled, which means everything inflated by 100%, and that is actually why you feel like you can't afford life anymore. Stay home, stay safe, had a price.
Big one.
Now you're paying it, and you'll continue to pay it for as long as you live. Food for thought next time someone tells you it's a good idea to press pause on the economy.
Especially when the kind of people who are telling you to press pause on the economy – and how fucking useless they are to the world,
right?
To the society,
right?
Yeah, I mean, so, like, what's completely right there? And then just to wrap up the conspiracy theory things. Like, people like talking about it because it is just more interesting than the news and everyday kind of stuff.
Sure,
but there's always going to be aspects to it where you take it with a pinch of salt within a time.
Sure,
a lot of people would, what gives conspiracy theories like bad names is that people who make it their identity and they really go far too deep. I mostly just love like laughing at pedos, joking about them.
Yeah, yeah, because they are funny. I mean, again, so you and I, if we saw a van with some little man in it, we would have laughed or punched him in the nuts.
Probably, yeah.
But some people are truly afraid of pedos. I mean, people were afraid of Michael Jackson. And speaking of conspiracy theories again, Ben seems to be...
Guys.
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to let you explain yourself. Ben seems to be on the verge of defending Michael Jackson against the real pedos.
Guys, Michael didn't fuck no kids. And I tell you what, he was the smokescreen that allowed all those others to get away with
this.
He didn't fuck no kids. He didn't. Michael was a kid, right? And everything about that guy, if you actually take some time to go into Michael, okay? Michael was smeared so badly because he was actually a little bit of an anti-Semite.
Oh, is
that
it?
Which in his own right is allowed. I'm not saying it's the thing you must do.
You don't have to like everybody.
You don't have to like everyone. So Michael's gripe, and he said so, was with the Jews. Because he felt like he was being Jewed in the industry. I mean, one of his songs was like, screw me, Jew me.
Yeah, right.
Everybody do me.
Yeah, he was an anti-Semite. Yeah.
So if Michael's worst crime in the world was being an anti-Semite, which is basically 80% of the liberal left on social media, okay? Yeah. Michael was no worse than someone's virtue signaling aunt right now in America. And then people smeared him so badly. There was no proof. He was... constantly
hanging around with all those children and
because
they were in his bed.
He was a kid.
Yeah, but come on, Ben.
Gareth, when you were a child, how many sleepovers did you have with your friends?
Yes, but my friends weren't 40-year-old pop music.
I'm not saying
people.
I'm not saying it was, but as a child, there's a normal thing for you, right?
Yeah, up to a certain age.
Give Michael some grace here. Michael thought he was a child. He felt comfortable with children. He wasn't fucking them. Guys, right. I will stand with that.
Now, people are going to get this show recommended by their own friends, Ben, and then they're going to come here and hear you.
I'm not saying this. I'm not saying this because Michael Jackson once wrote a song called Ben. All I'm saying is,
I think he did actually.
It was about his pet rat. Look, it was about everything coming out in the wash now, right? Epstein, P. Diddy, Oprah. All these different sort of things, these evils, right?
The Clintons.
If you shine a light on... Exactly, look at this.
While the spotlights were aimed at false accusations against Michael Jackson, the real criminals operated in silence, shielded by,
look how brazen
by the
smokescreen.
Michael was declared innocent after more than 11 years of FBI investigations. No evidence ever found, even to this day.
See, exactly. Well, Harvey Weinstein and that
Jimmy Savile,
look how brazen they
Jeffrey
look.
Jeffrey Epstein,
because
P. Diddy.
Michael was in the headwind of pedo-ness, and he wasn't a pedo. He just really liked kids, and he wanted kids to be happy.
I love it, children. Yeah, I remember that. There was something not kosher about Michael.
Exactly. You grew up with Tito banging whores against your bedpost at night on tour. You're not going to be a normal kid either.
Yeah, all right.
You got that
I'm
as
not,
a dad?
I'm not going to jump down this rabbit hole. Sorry.
Guys, it's all going to come out, Sam.
Uh-uh. All right, well, let's see. I mean, there are much funnier things going on. And by the way, I just want to say this show is not – because people are now saying this. They're saying obvious things like we're not in the Epstein files. So you saw this week people from various places in the world, people in fiction, all coming out saying not in the pedo – Epstein files. So we're very proud that we're not in the Epstein files. In fact, we have a video, an instructional video for children, which we think may be handy in case you're walking down the street and you see someone like Jeffrey Epstein or P. Diddy. You know, you go to some, 10-year-old birthday party and there's a dodgy looking man. This is for you.
Don't touch me, don't touch me, here and there.
Don't touch me, here and there.
Don't kiss me, everywhere.
Don't kiss me, everywhere.
Don't abuse me, anywhere.
Don't abuse me, everywhere.
If you want to touch me,
if you want to
my parents.
I beg for my parents.
If you want to kiss me.
If you want to kiss me.
I will call the police.
I will call the police.
If you want to abuse me.
If you want to abuse me.
I will kick you somewhere.
I will kick you somewhere. When
I see. At the end there, that's where they're starting to get the message across.
Yeah, you got to use violence. But
you have to.
I think that video is an anti-cousin video, though.
It's not from Pakistan. It's from India. Pakistan's the one with the cousin problem. Okay. Well, maybe the whole subcontinent. I don't know. While we're throwing everyone except Michael Jackson under the bus this morning, we may as well. All right. Most populous place in the world.
Yeah. I just think Michael should get his flowers now. He's dead, unfortunately.
It has been really nice, says Carl DeSantos, to be part of Ben's hair journey. I look at him now and I feel a sense of achievement. I still can't believe he fucked it up.
Okay, what do you mean I fucked it up?
No, he's talking about a past relationship of yours.
Oh, Carl, get over it. Fuck.
Some people, clearly some people haven't. Gareth, was Jesse Jackson in your death list? No. And you know what, James, we have to assign these death lists immediately because
James, I put down my hardworking 100 Ront. Has that gone into Red Bulls and cigarettes already?
Yeah, definitely. James arrived with a six pack of Red Bulls this morning. I think it's your 100 Ront.
Stupidly.
But we've got to move on this because Robert Duvall, there are a lot of deaths this week.
Yeah.
And you know, it's going to be one of those years where you have a whole bunch of them in a row. We've got to get into this death pool immediately. Oh, there's money to be made.
So, I mean, we wouldn't have had either of them on our list because they're not quite there.
No, and Jesse Jackson I thought he was dead years ago already. But Robert Duvall, of course, famous movie actor.
But not quite a Clint Eastwood.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, sort of in the B list.
But it's a reminder that people are
then Slippery Pickle says, if Blanket sues you guys, just know you deserve it.
Why? I'm doing nothing but positive.
No, you're actually supporting his dad.
Yeah.
You like Blanket and the family.
I don't care about the offspring. I mean, let's be honest, Michael was a weird guy. I can't imagine his kids are going to be great.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Hey, the other one was Dawson, Dawson's Creek Dawson.
Oh, yeah, James Van Der Beek.
James Van Der Beek.
He had some ravenous cancer, didn't he?
Yeah, he wasn't well. Again, you see these videos that they're putting up, these AI-created videos where they find like a TV show from the 90s and then they show what the actors look like now and they're all greeting each other in like a big circle. And it's so depressing because you see these people who you remember. Remember Tiffany Amber Thiessen?
Yeah, Beverly Hills 90210.
She was like hot. I mean, she's not bad for her age at all. I'd still rate her at 8 or a 9 for her age. But it's depressing to see these people. They don't look like, you know, they used to look when we watched these shows. No,
age is the worst thing. Like I'm going to become a full hermit at the age of unsightly. I don't know when it is.
Yeah,
it could be 70.
The moment that happens, I think just
the moment I look at the mirror,
don't
I go,
leave your house.
No one needs to see that.
Yeah, just don't leave.
Just not going to leave.
Yeah. That's a very good strategy.
You know, like I walked past this woman the other day. And again, she's living her life, and may she do it for a very long time.
Yes.
But she was very unsightly.
Oh, as in just a total mess.
I wasn't concentrating. I looked up, and she just looked like life had thrown her all of the googlies.
Wow.
And it was a nice experience.
Was she in your way?
She was, yeah.
Oh, okay. Did you encounter her in a shop?
On the way to a shop.
Oh. How unfortunate. Did it put you off your shopping list?
Did a bit for like 3 seconds.
You had to reconfigure, reboot.
But then I thought to myself, okay, well, if you want to go be a hermit, then you have to have someone looking after you like Andrew does.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see, even being a royal isn't enough bad as he was.
I think I'll start taking auditions around 65. Although I think I'll be good until about 80.
What, for a servant or for a...
Like a general caregiver, but not like one of those nurses who comes there because she gets paid to. It's like, I want someone who's...
Actually wants to be there.
Yeah, and I've got to give them a reason
for
it.
No one wants to be around a 65-year-old.
I've got to give them a reason for it.
Money.
Yeah.
That's the only reason anyone will hang around with a 65-year-old is money.
Ben, I've got a question.
65-year-old. Oh, wait, we've got a question from our producer, James. Yes, go ahead.
Here comes Arsenal.
What are your requirements for like a stay-in nurse person? What is your list of requirements?
James, I think someone that just can go to the shops. That's pretty much it.
Go to toilet.
No, I will forever go toilet myself. The day I can't toilet myself, I probably will end it, actually. So I think there's different stages to it. Someone going to public for me and is obviously pretty handy with, like, video calls. So if I want a particular thing, they can find that kind of stuff. And then I guess good with animals, because at that stage I'll have many. Yeah, James, I haven't really thought about it too much. All I know is that I think my appreciation for my fellow man...
You're not
going
to have a lot of options. Let's be honest. You're going to have to pay them.
No, of course I'll pay them, obviously. Yeah. No, obviously I want to pay them, but yeah, it needs to be someone who's going to be interesting in my life. But yeah, James, I think the moral of the story is that I just don't want to be unsightly in
oh,
in
you're going to be. There's old men are by and large unsightly.
You know when you get those
very few old men
big
who are,
floppy fucking ears, and you're so old, you don't know you're staring anymore.
Well, you see, at my gym, and I tend to go at times where there aren't a lot of people, which is pleasant.
True freedom and wealth, yeah.
But so do a lot of very, very old men who's, you know, I mean, listen, they're at the gym, so they're trying. Good and moment. I admire that. But these guys, it's a horrible sight to encounter. They stand around at their balls out the Boys. Whole time.
Every time.
In the locker room, you know?
So there's this old guy at my gym who, I mean, I say he's old. He's like one of those guys that maybe went gray very early, but he's trying to, like, get to know everyone at the gym, okay?
Oh, no.
This is different to the other guy who talks to all the girls.
Yeah. There are a couple of those at my – they always want to talk to you. And oh, how's it there? Yeah.
And, like, he'll talk to anyone who's, like, well-built. And he talks louder than he needs to. He's like a little bit too, you know, in your face, and as soon as you give him an inch, this motherfucker will tell you about his life.
Then you're trapped.
I can't be that guy.
That's why I think. Okay, so women may be judged much more harshly.
Yeah.
On not being young, or not being beautiful forever.
Yeah.
Right. But that lasts a while, and then people get over it. And I think men are much worse when they're old. Old women are – you could still deal with old women. You know, they still – most of them, they know how to behave. They don't really cause a lot of trouble.
A bit more discretion.
Yeah, and they have a dignity about them. I'm not saying everyone, but most.
Fergie.
You know, yeah, Fergie's got none. But they're pleasant to be around. They don't just talk about themselves all the time and have those long droopy ears and long balls and the – fucking gray hairs coming out of everywhere. It's just revolting.
It's weird how even when you don't see the long balls, it's the presence of the
you
long
balls. You just know that. You know they're
Knights
there.
Of the long balls.
You don't need to see them to know that they could be coming out of the trouser leg at any moment. It's just very, very off-putting.
You've got long ball energy. Yeah, it is. It's like a pedanticness about old men.
They just talk about themselves nonstop.
It's like they need to be cared for and stuff. Women do kind of get on with things.
Hey, we got another death. You see, we got to move on this, James. Absolutely no later than next Friday.
Who's the latest?
We're missing out. Eric Dane?
Who's that?
He's the guy for – this guy.
Who's that?
So he was in Grey's Anatomy, and didn't he do
wasn't
Euphoria?
Wasn't he McSteamer or something?
He was McSteamy in not Euphoria, in Grey's Anatomy, and then he did Euphoria.
Grey's Anatomy for me was
what
like,
did he die from? ALS.
Grey's Anatomy for me was like a watershed moment in life where life actually got shitter. Because then guys started watching crap TV and drippy feminine bullshit.
Yeah. I never watched an episode of Grey's Anatomy. Oh, I can honestly tell you I didn't know it.
And that chick with the prune face, and I think she was the sex symbol in there. I don't know.
The prune.
It was a dreadful show.
See if you can find
show.
A picture of the chick with a prune face for me from Grey's Anatomy.
the Grey, her anatomy.
Oh, right. Was she the lead?
I assume so.
Okay.
What a terrible show that was, huh? Because like, ER was kind of like, cool, it's hospitals, it's George Clooney. Suddenly it's like, oh, and then you look at this woman's sulk all day.
Durban Dope says, morning, old age is a privilege granted to a few. No, there are too many people living much too long these days. It used to be that. That's absolutely right, historically. But not anymore. Now, there are lots of total assholes who get to live a very long time.
Far too long.
You know, people who really just have no business being on earth beyond 80.
No, I think if you,
really?
if you there are people, the old age of privilege thing is great if they use it. You get complacent old people. They're no better than
children.
They
just sit around.
No, they're dreadful.
Eating cereal.
It's when you meet a proper, good, interesting old person.
Yeah.
One of the greatest conversations you'll ever have.
Absolutely. Few and far between. I mean, I have friends in their 90s.
And not too unsightly.
No, and fun to be around. I'm sitting here with my mother, and she thinks you talk shit. So, okay, well, how old's your mom, Durban Dope? I mean, is she, like, proper ancient?
Guys, you've got to remember, life's a meritocracy till the final day.
Right, till the day you die.
You do not stop trying to add value. And you don't just come here and say, well, I'm this, so therefore you must be this. Like, screw you.
So, Tracy says that the lead actress from Grey's Anatomy was like a Temu Renee Zellweger.
Oh, so well said. Yeah, exactly. More power to
you,
but not funny.
Show me what she looks like. Have you got a picture of that old woman with a prune face, as Ben called
her? It's actually such, yeah, because Renee Zellweger was like endearing.
Yeah, she was.
And she was funny.
She's still alive.
And then this woman was like
for now.
All the air got pumped out of the tires kind of vibe, and that was her.
I never watched the show, so I don't even know. There it is, that one. Is that the prune face?
That's obviously a dressed up photo.
Yeah, sure. I don't think she's so bad. Trust James and Flex to find the most flattering picture of her they could.
Pervert.
All right. I do want to get to sport, and we've got Dr. Hanan coming up. So maybe we should. Let's move while we can. Where are you headed in this outfit?
Going to the Kruger. Because, you know, after the floods, I need to see what's happened.
Yeah, you need to go and document all the damage.
Well, I go every quarter because
apparently the animals are having a great time.
I'm sure they are. Yeah. I mean, there's many camps that aren't going to be open until end of year.
Okay.
Like Letaba is basically just sand at the moment because that river obviously burst its banks and kept going.
I don't know that much about the park. I've run out of stuff I can relate to with you.
Well, Gareth, I have to go because I know how I function in life. If I don't go to the Kruger Park from time to time, I start getting cancer.
Yeah, you're like my parents. They love it.
And I need that. I need that sort of reset. And I've had a lot of screen time the last 3 weeks.
Oh no!
So I need this.
Okay,
I need this few days. But guys, you know we've been talking about Canal Plus.
Yes, and they took over. They own SuperSport, DStv, Mnet, all of that stuff. Commissioning any shows on Mzansi Magic or CakeNet at the moment. I think they've said freeze.
All of that. And now SuperSport doesn't even get to choose what sports they buy and what deals they go into.
Apparently the whole sporting rights thing is up in the air.
So
how the whole world of sports works. That
I know, guys. So
if you're a broadcaster, you have to pay for the rights, and SuperSport were damn fine at doing it. You will not find us in... I don't know, 25 years of broadcasting, I've never said a shit thing about SuperSport. I might not be the world's biggest sports fan, but you can tell they've done a good job from day one.
Yeah, so just picking up from last week's conversation where I said the writing is very much on the wall that things may not ever be the same, it's pretty clear. Like, as soon as a company gets the whole, people say mergers and acquisitions, because they're going to murder the soul out of
them. Yeah, a bunch of people in suits have been in...
Yeah.
Financial services for a long time, mergers and acquisitions, asset strippers, basically.
Yeah,
so they come in and they completely destroy companies.
It's going to be an absolute reality how these things play out from here. So I think we'll still get the FIFA World Cup. So
we're holding thumbs for that because that's this year.
Yeah, guys. So I don't think it's a pretty story from here on in.
Okay,
but this is where
what
changes.
Kicked it off for us was the Winter Olympics, and there's no coverage of that, right?
I still have not seen live bobsled. I'm so poor as a person.
Are you? You went into a almost Shakespearean diatribe about how much you were in love with what you'd seen in the Winter Olympics just a week ago. Are you still feeling that way? Is there anything else that's
not so much? Because the coverage has just been obviously shit on YouTube, and I don't have a VPN, and I'm not going to suddenly go into different streaming. I mean, I need to maybe have like a longer term play if things get worse, but also like I've just been busy the last week. But this weekend, you can experience on YouTube live streaming the finals of the ice hockey and the curling.
Okay,
so if you like those sports, you can go onto YouTube. And
curling
you'll get
is everyone's favorite.
Well, I know. Mash has actually arrived as a curler today.
Yeah, he's dressed something. As a curler.
Just dressed as a curler, coming with a mop. Yeah, guys. So Winter Olympics. I would love to tell you more. Just I haven't been able to watch any of it. Norway's still ahead. They're going to win.
Yes.
They're the medals tables. Then it's Italy. Then it's America. I think. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. I just think that this whole thing around Canal Plus, Super Sports, it's going to get worse and worse. But this is something I want to put more effort into in weeks to come, is what does this mean for competitor markets? What does this mean for competitive sort of companies that want to come up and say, right, we are going to be the best for rugby going forward. We're going to be the best for cricket, whatever it is. I just don't want to get to the stage like the rest of the world has had to be, where they've got 5 or 6 subscriptions. So let's just say a hypothetical 1,000 Rand on SuperSport gives you this, and then a hypothetical 977 Rand, 23 cents gives you 5 of this.
Right.
We all want the one.
Are you going to put this together for us?
It's all going to kind of break out from here. We've still got a bit more time on the wicket, so to speak, with SuperSport. And again, I can't confirm what's being taken away or what the plan is going forward. It just doesn't look very good.
All right. There was some abuse of you as an Arsenal fan earlier.
Get fucked.
Yeah. No.
Shut up, James. Guys, that's the next thing I'm talking about, right? You know, I hide from nothing. So, yes, Arsenal, for the first time, I think, in the Premier League's history, the top team went to the shittest team, and, like, they were 2-0 up, and they drew 2-2. See, in the race, the title run is an interesting one. Champions, what they do is they keep winning, and then they win. You'd think that that's pretty obvious, right? No. Arsenal get to these squeaky bum months, and suddenly we're grinding out like one pointers against Wolves. Wolves, like, a lot of those guys were getting second jobs. They're so shit. they're just terrible. But, like, we went to the Molyneux, and I say we, obviously, because I'm a passionate Arsenal fan. And the thing that gets Arsenal a lot nowadays, every time they play, all of these common gits, they all start singing, "You're number two. You're number two. You're going to finish second. Ah, fuck you." And it's ringing around everywhere to the delight of James and every other smug Man United fan.
Here's Gavin in the comments. Says, "Ben, this Arsenal downfall, he calls it a downfall, is going down as the greatest choke ever in Premier League history, isn't it?"
Guys, has that happened yet? It's like Bitcoin's going to come back and Arsenal's going to come back. I think that's the big takeout from this week.
Okay.
I have zero confidence in either right now on that thing. So, yeah, Arsenal went to Wolves. They drew 2-2, okay? So they're only 1 point ahead now, essentially, of Man City. And, yes, that does suck. It sucks a lot. And this weekend, the hardest thing in the Premier League is to play against a team that now has an interim manager. We've seen it with Man United. Basically, they turf the shit manager. All the players get like a little breathing space because they feel like they've been vindicated for not being coached by a prick. And then they play so well. So Arsenal on Sunday have to go to Spurs, Sunday at 6:30, and they have to play against an interim team, which is going to be cock dangerous. So, yeah, it's a tough time for Arsenal right now. It really is. And all the other guys are loving it. But that's what happens when you're at the top, right? Everybody wants to take a piece of you.
How's James's team doing?
No one cares. James doesn't even care.
Ask James. You don't even care, James.
James, who are they playing this weekend?
Liverpool.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nottingham Forest. Isn't that where Robin Hood used to hide?
Yeah, so you're making up names.
You're making it up. This is not a serious business.
Yeah, guys, so Premier League's going to be very interesting this weekend because obviously Man City is now, everyone's saying, well, you know, Man City know what to do at this time of the season, so they're going to win it, blah, blah, blah. They at home to Newcastle. Now, Newcastle just beat the living shit out of Karabakh in the Champions League.
Newcastle, by the way, is a terrible place.
Of course it is, but that's an
awful place. No, but that's what it's named after. I think if you're named after a shit pile, there's only so much you can do.
Yeah, but it's a traditional stronghold of English football. Not really, but yeah. But so their striker, who looks like Princess Diana, he's in good form. So maybe, man, you know, all the smugness.
He looks like Princess Diana.
He does. There was memes all the time that he reenacted every one of Princess Diana's famous hairstyles. James, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, all right, yeah, I'd like to
Gordon,
see.
Gordon, whose name is.
Gordon.
I don't know first names, but he's like the Princess Di guy. Anyway, he's in great form right now. So I'm hoping that he has an absolute stunner this weekend and they can somehow stun Man City. Aston Villa playing Leeds on Saturday at 5, Chelsea versus Burnley also at 5. And then, yeah, James's team, Nottingham Forest, will be away to Liverpool will be away to Nottingham Forest.
All right.
But, guys, Proteas cricket. This is the main thing I want to talk about today. Because we've gone unbeaten through the group stages of the T20 World Cup.
Yes.
So, obviously, we took on Afghanistan, that double super over, which was just pure madness. And then we played against New Zealand, who historically have always been tricky buggers in the World Cups for us.
Yes.
Often beating us. Hammered them. Absolutely hammered them. So we were unbeaten. The biggest story, though, Zimbabwe.
Yes, Australia.
Fucked up Australia, and then they drilled Sri Lanka yesterday. Sri Lanka's home team. You think, like, this is the tournament they're going to come together. No, uh-huh. Zim, they're doing everything.
They just walked right
absolutely
through Australia.
On fire, okay? Yeah. So, James, can you pop up that log there? Sorry, Flex. Okay, so
there it is.
How it works is that we have these expanded World Cups where, like, Oman, Nepal, Italy, everyone comes together, has a bit of a draw. They bring their girlfriends
Nepal,
together. It's fun.
Nepal, they can't even feel the team, can they?
Do they have a field?
High in the Himalayas.
Well, they were there, Gareth. They had a good time.
There's no flat places to play cricket in the Himalayas.
Well, they've obviously found somewhere. So now we go into what's called the Super Eights. So what the Super Eights is that the top two teams from all the pools, they go into two additional pools now where you get a group one and two, okay? So we are in the group of India, West Indies, and Zimbabwe. So we'll play all of those teams. We'll play three additional games. The top two teams from each group then go into the semifinals. So how that works is that this Sunday we play against India at 3:30.
Ooh.
Big game because that was the repeat of the World Cup final from last year out when we choked the living crap out of it, needing very few runs with decent amount of balls. And then next Thursday we play West Indies at 11:30, and then next Sunday we'll play Zim at 11:30.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's basically how it's going to work out.
Group two looks substantially shittier than us.
It is. It is completely
Our group is
shittier.
Much more high profile.
Absolutely, Gareth. We have drawn the group of death here because England, mostly shit. New Zealand, we just ran through them.
Yeah.
Pakistan got hammered by India.
Yeah.
And obviously...
And their cousins.
And their cousins when they get home. Mm-hmm. And then Sri Lanka, Sri Lanka. Yeah. They're still always reeling from a coup or a war or some sort of oppression. Yeah, so guys, we're in group one. So yeah, we should look. We just had a home series against the West Indies. We weren't too troubled by them. They're a good team on their day, obviously. Zim, yes, they're a good team on their day. But T20 cricket is exciting like that. If this was Test match cricket, they don't have the resources to play properly. But in a 20-over sort of speed dead cricket, wonderful, wonderful. Also wonderful is rugby right now because England, who obviously always think they're the best in the world, they had this really amazing winning streak. And then they played against Scotland last week and absolutely shat the bed.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Hugely unfortunate, Gareth, because they're meant to be the best team. So, like I said last week, is that the final game of the Six Nations is France versus England, which essentially will be a final. But France now have won everything. They hammered Wales last week because everyone does that. Ireland were even beaten up a little by Italy. So, yeah, England dropped the ball big time. So this weekend, they're going to have to redeem themselves. They're at home versus Ireland at 4:10. Wales versus Scotland, 20-7. And then Sunday, France will be beating Italy at 5:10. There's a URC game. We've got to try to catch this up. The Lions are hosting the Sharks in front of about 2,000 people in Doornfontein.
That's tiny. And, what an embarrassing small audience for that.
It was hugely embarrassing. So the Sharks there's like this redemption story that the Sharks are trying to sell to us right now based on obviously beating the Stormers in back-to-back weekends.
Okay.
So good for them. It's still really
That's
annoying.
It's a very thin story, I've got to say.
Well, the Stormers are the best team prior to those two games. But it's annoying because now the Stormers might not finish top because of their boo-boos against the Sharks. Mm. But the thing about the Sharks is that they had that useless John Plumtree who must have had nudes of the board. He was working for free. I don't know if he was cleaning the change rooms afterwards, but he wasn't the right man for the job. He was cool back in like Super Rugby back in the day because Sharks like to be a bit, you know, cosmopolitan. So they had a New Zealander coaching them.
Right.
Just like they used to have a few Frenchies playing for them in the 90s. The Sharks like to be a bit cavalier.
Sure.
But Plumtree was just dog awful. And then JP Peterson, who used to obviously play for the Springboks and the Sharks, he came back as interim manager, just like Spurs. He's now been given the full, this is it, this is your team.
Okay.
And there's motivational stuff about JP Peterson now saying nothing's impossible, and the Sharks are feeling all great. Okay. So they're currently ninth in the URC. You need to get into top eight to be in the playoffs. So that'll take place at 2:00 on Saturday. And that's pretty much it for the sport. There's lots of golf.
Oh, no, wait. We do. Well, but you want to say something about golf? Go ahead. And then I've got to bring up one other thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of golf locally. There's the Durban Open, the Johnson Workwear Durban Open. So
that's great.
Dress like that and...
Oh.
I mean, Durban Country Club is just beautiful. I'm going there next month. I'm hugely excited about that. So that's a local thing.
Okay.
And there's always so much golf in the rest of the world.
All right. So how about the Good Hope Center? We've got to talk about that. So this is an eyesore. It's probably the ugliest building in Cape Town, aside from those three towers that have ruined
those
Table Mount.
Towers. You know, there's meant to be 10 of those. Them. There were originally 10 of them.
Whoever built those, if they're dead, they must dig them up and defile the corpse. Because
imagine the views they have here.
It is.
To live in one of
but
those.
But they're so ugly. And surely we have someone powerful enough to be able to buy them and demolish them and give those people some housing in a place no one else wants to live.
In my mind, it's just a bunch of old Jews live there.
Is that what you anti-Semite? Is that what you think?
What would you like me to call them? Old Jewish people. Jews call each other Jews.
Why? Do you think they're just living a long time and not selling?
I reckon that's a Cape Town. Because, I mean, to get in on those properties, you have to know people back in the day.
Okay.
So I reckon it's just like old Jews living their best life up there.
Okay.
Because those apartments, geez, the views.
You think, have you been there?
I haven't.
No, I haven't been there either, but from the outside, they're very
I would
ugly.
Imagine is that because they're not really that well nicely done up, I think you've got a lot of old people who just are content with what they've got. And they will fight you.
They'll fight you.
They'll fight you, and they'll badmouth Michael Jackson.
All right. Very good.
So, yeah, Good Hope Center, Gareth. So,
yeah, that's much uglier. That's right in the center of town. It's just near the castle.
It's basically next. It's the modern castle.
Right, and it's face brick.
Look, someone when it was built, someone went, yassas, that's provocative. But it is fucking ugly. Ugly now. And it's up for auction. So the city are auctioning certain things. So,
how much?
I don't know. It's an auction. Yeah. Go there.
Well, they've got a starting price, don't they?
I mean, much like the Beatles' whole collection of music, Michael Jackson could have gone in there and auctioned, bid for it.
He did.
He did. He got it. That's another reason why they smeared him as a homo.
Haven't you got that picture of the Good Hope Center for us, James? There it is.
So the Good Hope Center, in my mind, is well-placed to become the greatest indoor golf facility in Cape Town because outdoor golf in Cape Town is a bit shit. Weather's not great, not too many courses. You're next to a highway all the time, unless you've got the money to go play Pearl Valley golfer in Cape Town. I mean, the Met's cool for Sundowner Golf and that kind of stuff.
Could it sustain itself?
I don't think so.
Not on golf.
This is always the problem with anything exotic. So, you know, in Las Vegas, they've got the Sphere.
Yeah.
So another idea that came out in X, someone said, is that we can build our own version of the Sphere, which would be really fun.
Well, if you have a lot of imagination, you could maybe turn those circles around and it could become a half a sphere.
So the other thing is you make it
into a very ugly building.
An indoor Winter Olympics training camp. So
yeah, sure, because we have so many Winter Olympians.
Well, we don't, Gareth, because we haven't got a Winter Olympics indoor facility. But if we put an ice rink in there, we can get our ice hockey teams together. We can get skaters.
Listen, they've tried ice rinks at shopping malls and things. It's just not a thing in this country.
But that's mostly just to get fat kids moving. But like, what if we really focus on this and we say, right, you're a sprinter. Do you want to be an ice skater?
All right. So you say indoor golf. Okay.
But then it would need to be, there needs to be like a league. So that tomorrow golf league, I don't think it really is a great idea, but there is like potential to make it a sporting thing.
Right. I mean,
like sports goes own economy, right? And sport attracts travel and a variety of things.
Well, I've got such a bugbear, but I'm going to let you go to the Kruger Park because I know you've got to do that. I have discovered a whole genre of people, content creators, who really should be stopped. They are a scourge. They are out there just heaping scorn on the idea that anyone in internet realm is at all talented. These are the worst people. And you know who they are?
Think
of the lowest of the low.
Lowest of the low content creators.
Yeah.
Mommy bloggers.
No, this is even worse.
Oh, wow.
No, this is that poor. Estate agents.
Do they create
content?
Have
you noticed? Oh, my God. Just show him those two chicks from New Zealand.
Oh, no. I think this is stuff that you send me.
Oh, yeah. You got to see this. Christ. All right. I'm just going to give you a taste, and then we've got to get to Dr. Hanan. He hasn't joined you. Okay. Show the New Zealand, the Kiwi chicks.
I knew this was going to happen to me.
A little birdie just told me that you want to sell your property. Give us a call today.
See? That's so bad. But it is so abominably cuck.
Horrendous, but again, in that market, maybe marketing genius.
There's another one. Show them the other one of LP
the woman
and
who
Dix.
Flew through the roof.
The woman who flew through the roof. But wait, there's more. This is the ugliest accent in the world. It really is. So they do videos like this all the time. These are just estate agents, right?
He's probably got a kid who's learning this shit.
I don't know. They've found AI and helped. The AI helped them. It's helping everyone. No one can think without fucking AI these days. So here's LP and Bix in New Zealand with another winning video.
But these women look like ex-meth addicts.
Yeah, they do. It's
suddenly
horrible.
Hit like Herbalife.
And they shouldn't be making this stuff. But clearly, the real estate agent world has become super competitive. And the edge they think they have, and it's not just them. I've got a bunch of these to just – we have to stop this. People of Earth, we must stop this before it becomes an absolute nightmare. If the aliens do come and they see one of these videos, they will blow us the fuck up.
No, they'll leave us alone. These people are – this is not the best defense strategy.
You think?
They're channeling into these.
Okay,
these
show
droughts.
Another one. Let's see if he still believes it after this.
Hi, I'm Lauren Johnson of Lux Properties, and I'm going to tell you why to choose me to be your realtor. I've secured contracts between showings, I've negotiated inspections while working out, and I even once closed a deal in my sleep. Some might call it hustle, but I just say, what? Like it's hard?
Some people think I'm too blonde to understand zoning codes. To that, I say, please, I can highlight a deed restriction better than a hairstylist can highlight my hair.
The amount of cock that Lauren saw in college. Jeepers. Wow. She seems great, though.
Okay, well, we'll save the rest. You got Dr. Hanan for us? Okay, he's much more interesting than these terrible estate agents. But we'll get back to them because they need to be stopped.
All right, guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right. So, Dr. Hanan, how are you this morning? Oh, God, look at Ben. Jesus. Have you ever seen such unprofessional behavior on a set in your life? All right, so how are you, Doc?
That was the poorest magic trick ever.
God, Ben would be a cuck musician. Magician. Did I say musician? I just did what? Who was it? There was that singer who did the same thing. She called it a musician, but it was a magician. I can't remember. Very stupid woman. All right. So, Dr. Hanan, according to James, this is what you want to talk about this morning, or what someone in the audience wants to talk about. So, apparently, there is this myth going around that women are more naturally empathetic than men. Is this true? I'm very interested in this answer. I see things, or it's just taken for granted that women are better at sympathizing, empathizing, being compassionate. They are more emotionally in touch. As a rule, that seems to me like it's right.
Women, it is true that women have a much more vast language and vocabulary for describing their feelings.
Yes.
It's like walking into a room and, you know, men see the room, the color of the walls blue, and women see it as, I don't know, turquoise or ocean blue, royal blue, all different variants of blue. And the same thing with feelings. So women are able to define their feelings in many, many different ways. While men just go, I'm sad, I'm angry, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm lonely. While women see all these kind of
so basically,
the emotion.
I hate to paraphrase you, but it's almost like men have an emotions toolbox that's this big, and we've got a pair of pliers, a hammer, and a hacksaw. And women have got every kind of screwdriver you can imagine, every kind of scissors, pliers. They've got different kinds of nails, different hammers. They've got miter joint making machines. They've got all these tools. Their garage is full when it comes to emotion. Ours is just straight up simple.
Well, yes, but now the question is, how helpful is it? Should I have 47 different types of hammers, or should I just have one? And my argument is having more tools in your toolbox in terms of the way that you describe your feelings is not necessarily more helpful. As a matter of fact, you can waste time looking for the perfect hammer and never find it, as opposed to just have one hammer and get the job done. So So the question is not for me whether women have a much more vast language or ways to describe how they feel and how they empathize with other people, but rather whether it's helpful. The fact that I can pick up on somebody's emotions, rightfully or wrongfully, accurately or inaccurately, doesn't mean that I'm being effective in helping that individual. So I can feel sorry for somebody, but that doesn't necessarily help them. I can feel empathetic towards somebody.
It doesn't help anybody, right?
Exactly. You shouldn't feel sorry for anybody. You should empower them to go and, you know, get the tools to manage their own lives. But to feel sorry for somebody doesn't mean that it's helpful. So yes, do women have a much more vast language or understanding or labeling or describing what somebody else is feeling? Sure. But is it helpful? Well, that's the question.
All right. So let's just talk about where this empathy comes from, because it might be more by socialization than it is by biology. And perhaps, you know, we can talk about what the value of empathy in society is, because you and I just said now, and I saw Mash was nodding his head as well, that it doesn't help to feel sorry for somebody. But where does empathy play a role? I can immediately think that this morning when Ben was talking about when he's 65, 70 years old and no one wants to be around him, there are empathetic people who, sure, I mean, for a fee, especially to be around Ben, but for a fee, they'll be empathetic. They'll come and, I don't know, make sure that his pillows are there on his bed and, you know, he hasn't weed in his pants and that kind of thing. You need empathetic people to do that. I'm certainly not going to be that kind of empathetic person. Neither is he. Neither are you, Dr. Hanan. So we need them.
Yeah, so empathy is completely nurture. So we get socialized into developing empathy or developing the language to be able to relate to somebody else. So women are socialized from a much earlier age and rewarded for having this language of, you know, I feel sad and I feel anxious and I feel frustrated and I feel depressed and I feel down and I feel overwhelmed. Well, men are not rewarded for that. Men just want to play sports and rugby tackle each other. So we are much more rewarded for action as opposed to women much more rewarded for language. So it is completely socialized. But again, the question is it helpful? And
this is fascinating. So you're saying that there is a reward in language and being empathetic for women. How does giving that reward?
So you ask how women are rewarded? Is that what you asked?
No, I'm asking how is empathy rewarded? Like who's handing out the prizes that make empathy worth having? I mean, there's got to be a medal ceremony for all of these things, right? You say guys are mostly rewarded for action. And, I mean, I watched this fascinating clip the other day of a bunch of men being told that their wives – obviously, this is a trend that was going on the internet. The wives are saying, honey, I'm afraid I won't be able to pay the mortgage this month to their husbands, right? But none of these women are paying the mortgage, and the reaction from the husbands is, I think, very sweet. They kind of laugh. They go, "You've never paid the mortgage. What are you talking about? Did you hit your head this morning?" Every one of the husbands, and there are a range. I mean, the clip that I watched, I got bored after like 5 minutes, but it was these guys reacting in the sweetest way to their wives, saying, "I'm not going to be able to pay the mortgage this month." None of those women are paying the mortgage this month. The guy's reward is, I think, to know that his wife, girlfriend, is safe, that she can live in the house, that he'll pay for it, that he can raise his kids there if he has kids. This is the stuff that men find rewarding. What reward is there for empathy in the world?
So, you know, Gareth, if you had to watch children in the playground from 5 years old to, you know, to 18-year-olds, and obviously much older kids, you'll notice that if you're watching boys and girls play, the boys are playing soccer, the boys are kicking a ball around, they're throwing a ball around, they get rewarded for scoring a goal. They get rewarded for winning. They get rewarded for actions. The coolest kid is not the one that can tell a great story. The coolest kid is the one that can score a goal, that is a great team player, the one that actions. And if you had to watch women on the playing field, what are women doing? They're sitting in a circle and talking. They get rewarded for great storytelling. They get rewarded for what they saw on TikTok and what they saw in the news and what they saw on social media. And the greatest storyteller gets the award of being the queen bee.
But that's horseshit, because men are better at storytelling too. All the great writers in history have been men. Women don't even win at that, and that's their competition. I mean, am I looking at this like a guy? Am I just being stupid?
No, so women are, again, you get to the top of the tier by being rewarded for telling great stories. But it's all monopoly money. It doesn't mean anything. Just because you're a great storyteller, it's wonderful and it's great for your inner circle. As I said, you win monopoly money, but in real life, you get rewarded for action. So again, our question, yes, are women better in inverted commas at being able to tell what another person is feeling and be able to empathize
Even
reflect on what they're feeling? For sure. But how helpful is it? Well, again, that's the question mark.
Well, let's ask Mash, because he'll know. Mash, do you think there's any benefit to being able to feel whether someone is feeling a certain thing better than?
The only benefit there is to being empathetic, I believe, is in a relationship. If I'm in a relationship with someone, being empathetic towards them, it allows me to basically think on their behalf. Like, okay, I can see my person's not feeling all that well coming home from work today. Let me run them a bubble bath. You know, in a relationship, it makes sense. But just socially, from a social standpoint, it benefits nobody. It's like me projecting my habits. It benefits nobody. And yeah, it's like potential.
But you know what? I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something quickly, because this is important. Nobody can predict what another person is feeling. We all watch other people's world through our own lens. And our own lens is never somebody else's lens. So be able to say that person feels depressed actually is never accurate, because how do you know what is that depression to that person? Or that person is feeling sad. How do you know specifically what that sadness means to that person?
Right.
You got to, the magic is in fulfilling goals that empowers them. So being able to pick up on somebody's feelings, first of all, you'll never be able to do that. Never. You'll never be able to relate exactly as they are feeling it, because you don't live their lives. You've never lived their lives, and you can never have lived their lives. It just doesn't work that way. The question is, how can I fulfill a need that they need that empowers them to move forward? The magic is in the action that you can take in order to empower them.
Yeah, listen, we all have different strengths and weaknesses. And I think also it's a little bit facile and reductive to say women are X, men are Y. I think that generally there are areas of mutual interest and areas of mutual strength. But there are areas where I think perhaps women have just evolved, and I do think evolved is the word, because it's not something that is buried in the genes. It's something that they learn. They learn to listen and pay attention to other people's state of emotion, to other people's position in society. That women are much more perceptive of that kind of thing. They have intuition, which I do think is a thing. Men don't have that. Very few men that have intuition. Usually men have knowledge, or they have expertise in a particular realm. And that's also, you know, outside of that realm, is that really useful?
Well, that's the question. Think of the hunter-gatherer. So men have been rewarded for going out and getting the job done, and women have been rewarded for socializing and on a social level being on top of the hierarchy by telling stories. So again, it's how we are socialized. Which one is better? Well, again, are you able to achieve the desired outcome? That's what is real value. The rest is just, as I said, monopoly money.
All right, well, at least we're getting somewhere in trying to work each other out, because these were not conversations that happened 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Men couldn't have given a damn what women were feeling, and women were like, oh, these guys are just useless, savage barbarians. They don't know anything. They can't feel the damn thing. So at least we're getting closer, Dr. Hanan. We're getting better at this. We're talking it out, which is not a bad
thing. Yeah, sure. That's true. For sure.
All right. Listen, you have a good weekend.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and Mash, nice to see you. I thought we'd slide you in there while Dr. Hanan was still on. How are you doing? What's news?
Oh, I'm fabulous, Gareth. Life has been life.
Fabulous. That's a good choice of word. Bit gay, but okay.
Extremely gay. Starting the day off gay.
Fabulous. Very good.
But I've been good overall. Life has been just life.
You stay out of trouble. You're not upsetting all the people.
I'm staying out of trouble.
Good.
I am
good.
Not
Me
upsetting
too. You
anyone.
Know that, Mash? Good.
Yeah. Like, it's about time.
Yeah.
It's about time. And I'm just minding my business.
You know, regardless of what people think of us, you and I do not wake up in the morning and go, who are we going to piss off today?
No. And there's a saying that I heard recently. It's the path to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah, I know.
And it's absolutely true.
Well,
like, you're trying to help people,
like,
but people interpret it the wrong way. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's why you were doing it that matters.
Spot on.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of things. I started this conversation with Ben, but I want you to tell me what you think.
Okay.
So it turns out that the biggest content creation group on social media at the moment is these estate agents, and we have to stop them because the quality of the content is very poor. It's not funny, it's not entertaining, it's not thought-provoking, it doesn't make you feel any way, and it only really matters to the people in the tiniest area where those people are selling properties.
Absolutely. I don't have too much of a problem with the content. I think they're using the tools at their disposal and they're using it to the best of their ability. Because
it's not good enough, Mash. Let me give you some examples. This is so shit. Flex, play another one of those estate agents. Mash see. This is so bad.
Having a property too close to a railroad track is noisy and uncomfortable. When I choose a property for you, I make sure it's not very close to railroad track.
Okay.
Is that it?
That's it. You're saying, I'm going to quote you here. You said these people are using the tools at their disposal to generate better cars. That guy should not be. Listen, I've been in television and radio and now podcasting and all kinds of other shit for years.
Yeah.
It is not a game that's open to everybody and should not be. There are people who are completely unentertaining who think that they should be doing this stuff.
True.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm very happy to get out of the way if new talent comes along and they're better. But that guy and those two chicks from New Zealand that you saw earlier and that girl with enormous tits from Texas or wherever she's from, not good enough. Have we got another one to show him? Watch this guy. This is unbelievable. This guy's a content creator. Supposedly selling property based on his online reputation.
I can take you to the open house. It's time for you to check this out. It's great to go with it. Go ahead and make an offer now.
It's appalling.
It's not on beat. It's
so bad.
It's so bad.
Really, that's so bad. So you agree with me. They must be stopped.
I agree with you. But also, I think, Gareth, with anything, you need to be bad in order to be good.
No.
You don't just start off good.
Levy fines. These people must be punished financially. They must suffer where it hurts. I think if you are in a business like being an estate agent, we don't want to be entertained. That girl who just did that, I'll take you to the candy shop.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
It's not giving.
I don't want to ever see her doing that stuff again. Okay. And now, because I've sent these videos to James, now my algorithm's just churning out estate agents.
Oh, gosh.
Here's a guy with a face tattoo.
No.
Looks like he just got out of prison. And he's also selling property. I mean, it's shit property you'll see in the background. But he's also doing this. Take a look. Unacceptable. Here's this guy with I'll show you just now.
What? So anybody can be a real estate agent?
Anyone.
There's no licenses?
This is the point.
So is there like a course?
We've had these people on the show. They've come in and explained to us there's a course you have to do. You have to be certified. You have to be – there's a board that approves that you
– okay. At least there's a procedure,
sounds
like.
I mean, it's like – I think it's harder to get a matric.
It's harder to get.
That's just my opinion.
But I've never been too exposed to like the real estate side of things. So I'm not too sure how exactly it works. But
count your blessings. You don't want to be. Haven't you seen enough to put you off for the rest of your life?
I have to agree. I have. I mean, if I was actually interested in the house that candy shop girl was singing in front of, I would be like, I love this house. But because of her, I don't want this house anymore.
No. Exactly. It's like those super corny secondhand car sales dealership owner ads in the US. That's from Anton. Steven says, cringe, just like our politicians' Facebook vids. Oh, yeah. I haven't seen a lot from our politicians lately.
They've been quiet.
No, I've also, that's not going to pitch on my algorithm.
Yeah,
I'm not that interested in what they're doing, man.
We don't want to see that.
No,
period.
I don't. You know, I think about how this whole thing with Julius and the gun charges.
Yes.
I don't care. I think about John Steenhuisen not being leader of the DA. And
we shouldn't care.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I think about Herman Mashaba, who can't shut his mouth and no one wants to listen. Mm-hmm. And I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm like, these are not people worth spending time thinking about.
Mm-mm.
Right?
Not at all.
So let's get to the people who are. How is your crazy family? What's news on that front?
So my family, shame, they're behaving, hey? They're behaving.
Shame,
so my little brother, my little brother hasn't had a phone for quite some time.
Really?
So finally, hence like even on my videos, there was no way to tag because he didn't have like social media.
That's great.
Yeah, but now he has a phone. So he finally got his first iPhone and I'm scared. I'm scared, but also excited at the same time. I'm happy for him. And yeah, I'm excited to see what he's going to put out into the world. I hope it's not the same content
it's
as the real
this.
Estate agents.
I'm telling you, he's going to start making out. I'll take you to the candy shop.
I don't have a brother then.
You going to disown him?
I'm going to disown him. But Gareth, there's something that that has completely intrigued me as of late. Do you remember the metaverse? Speaking of social media.
Oh, what a waste of money. So that was when Zuckerberg decided to create this online universe called the
VR world.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And he thought everybody was going to get a pair of virtual reality.
That cost like $6,000.
Yeah, headset, whatever it is. And then we were going to spend all our time there.
Yeah. We're going to socialize there. Brands are going to come there, sponsor
buildings. That's all we're
going to
do.
In the VR world.
And we're going to have a little avatar and we're going to bounce around. I mean, I did try out a VR headset once.
Ooh, how was that?
Well, a friend of mine has a whole setup at his house.
Mm.
And he and his kid, they've got all the different, like, you could walk through parts of the world. It feels real.
Yeah.
It's amazing. They go to, you know, Paris and then they're in Rio de Janeiro or whatever. Mm. And you wear this headset and you feel like you're in there.
You feel like you're there.
But the multiverse... The metaverse? Yeah. I mean, do me a favor. I don't think we're ready for it. Humans can't even figure out. I was driving into work this morning. There were people crossing the street while I'm driving towards them. And I'm like, those people.
Oh, that's the usual.
Can you imagine? Because they clearly have no 3D. They have no depth perception.
Without
they can't
goggles.
Tell. And, you know, most of our deaths on the roads are pedestrians, right? Those people couldn't tell that. Unless I slowed down, I was likely to hit them.
Mm.
So they're taking their life in their hands.
They are.
They cannot judge distance.
Mm.
They haven't got 3D, let alone 2D. Now, you put a pair of VR goggles on people like that, they're gonna hurt themselves. They're going to fall down and do themselves enormous injury.
Absolutely. You actually remind me of a video I saw once of a granny.
Yeah.
Someone gave their granny a VR headset and it comes with the remotes and all that. And the granny throws the remote at the TV that's in front of the head.
Breaks it.
In front of her and breaks it. And she completely lost all sense of the fact that this was a virtual world. Completely lost all sense. Well,
you know what's weird is when you take off those headsets, you are a little bit disorientated for a bit.
Yeah, you are.
You're a bit dizzy or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yo, but now... Meta, obviously, this was a flop. The metaverse
billions
was
and billions of dollars.
They fired 20,000 people. Meta fired 20,000 people. This was around 2024. It was a big disaster. It still is a big disaster. But of course, Meta they've recovered through ad revenue. They're making quite a good amount of ad revenue now. And Gareth, there's a new bet now. So Mark Zuckerberg, Mark Zuckerberg, Lizard Man, has now made a new bet. As of 2 days ago, Facebook filed a patent for a new type of interaction that they want to push.
What is it?
The producers, please put up. I sent James two pictures. Yeah, it's this one. So I'm going to read this to you. So can everybody hear me while?
Yeah, go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is a patent that Facebook has applied for. And the title is Simulation of User of a Social Networking System Using a Language Model. Doesn't sound like much, but let's get into it. So it says here, a social networking system simulates a user using a language model trained using training data generated from user interactions performed by that user. The language model may be used for simulating the user when the user is absent from the social networking system. For example, when the user takes a long break or if the user is deceased.
Oh boy.
Do you know what this means, Gareth?
They're going to create a dead version of you.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you will want to. Some people are sick in the head.
Yeah.
And then you will be there forever.
Absolutely. So what Mark Zuckerberg has basically... I keep saying Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know.
You don't like the guy, clearly.
Clearly.
And I mean, his ideas, apart from Facebook in the very beginning and then buying everybody else's ideas, and it seems he wants to buy you even when you're dead.
When you're dead.
I don't like this.
So basically how this
don't like this.
Yeah, so how people are speculating this is going to work is so basically you're going to pay a subscription. Let's say your best friend dies, someone dies, and you're going to pay a subscription in order to reactivate their profile, so to speak, meaning that their profile will come back to life and it'll use data from their profile history, to not only generate posts, but to also generate images, to generate videos of them. I'm sure you've seen the Meta AI translations on Instagram, where it literally looks like the person is speaking Hindi. I look like I'm speaking Hindi half the time. And my biggest audience is from India, surprisingly, as a result.
Wow.
Yeah, so now they're going to take that technology and someone deceased's page will be
this.
Posting as if it's them.
I don't need to think about this for a long time. I know this is a bad idea. First of all, it really bothers me that instead of dealing with hard things like saying goodbye to someone you love, a family member, a friend, a husband, a wife, a child, God forbid. But part of life is that you have to deal with the difficulty of saying goodbye, right? And there's no way around that. Saying goodbye is part of what we've got to do as people.
Certainly.
And the moment you try to avoid the responsibility of having to say goodbye to someone, I think you just end up with massive problems. You end up with people who are not willing to accept things like death.
100%.
You have to be able to accept death. It's going to happen.
It's people not willing to accept reality as a whole.
Yes, correct.
It goes back to even how, remember when ChatGPT, I don't know if you are aware of this, but when ChatGPT went from GPT 4 to 5, many people were upset because they had fallen in love with GPT 4.
Oh no.
They had fallen completely in love with GPT 4.
Oh, you see.
Yep, and now apparently it's been announced that ChatGPT might soon allow graphic content. So generation of graphic content.
Okay, so they're going to try and take you when you're dead.
Yep.
They're now going to allow graphic content.
Yeah, so basically you're not going to get a break, Gareth. You're not going to get a break once you're 6 feet under. You will be naked on the internet. You will be posting reels.
You know, the good thing, as Christopher Hitchens used to say, at least with certain religions, when the earth closes in over you, you're finished.
100%.
At least you're allowed then to escape.
To just rest.
And rest. Now you will not be able to rest.
Ever.
Your soul will be forever bonded to some bullshit AI or to Mark Zuckerberg's companies, and they're going to own you in perpetuity.
And you'll
and
be
bring you back
your family.
Whenever they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Your family will be paying a subscription fee to talk to you 30 years later. 30 years later, Gareth, you have dissolved, but here you are posting on Instagram.
And imagine how fucking annoying it's going to be when people think they've buried you and you're gone.
Yeah.
And then you pop up on their Instagram feed. Hey!
Hey, honey, it's me, ooh, your grandfather. I need $50.
That'll be so cringe.
Yep, it's so gonna happen.
It's about to happen. In the next 5 years, Gareth, we're gonna see this happening. The technology is already there. It's just the paperwork and the legalities.
James,
now.
I don't think Mash has seen enough of these estate agents. I sent you some more. Where's the guy with the face tattoos? And then we need to get back to those two Kiwi chicks again. Have you got them? Because I feel like we haven't punished him enough.
Oh my gosh.
Look at this guy. He looks like a criminal who just got out of prison.
He's not selling property, is he?
Good afternoon, my Infantry Real Estate Group family. This is Ronald Eden with Keller Williams, West Atlanta. Today, we're in the city of Pittsburgh in downtown Atlanta. We're at a multifamily complex. It has 10 bedrooms, 10 bathrooms. It's selling for approximately $600,000. You can't.
Okay, so he's going to, and by the way, how shit does that place look? I just say it looks so shit.
It looks like a prison.
It does. And he looks like a prisoner. But you know, he may be a very good realtor, as Americans call them. Yeah. I just think enough. These guys are going to stop making these videos. Can't you just sell property the old-fashioned way? Put up a picture of the house and let people come and look at it.
Exactly.
I don't care about the personality of my estate agent. Do you?
Nobody cares.
No.
Nobody. And if you are going to be showcasing your business online, showcase the properties. We don't need to see you.
Yes.
Just showcase the property.
Yeah, but you see, everyone in the world wants to be famous, even the dead.
Yeah.
So, I
competition is tough. Hey, you're going to be competing with dead people online soon.
I don't want any more. Guys, we got to shut down the content creation game now. It's full.
It's done. We've had enough. Please.
It's over. There's no more tickets for sale, right?
Yeah. I mean, even people's deaths, they're now content creators. It's crazy.
Okay. So let's make a rule. Let's say if you're not in it right now, as of this morning, out.
It's not going to happen.
No. You got to find something else to do.
Yeah. Sure.
But with peace and love.
So, Gareth, that real estate agent, let's be real. He looks like he comes from prison. Let's be real.
Would you buy a property from him?
No. Absolutely not. But then it's also reinforcing the fact that it seems like
Mash, you're very prejudiced. What if he's a great conveyancing property selling? I don't know. I'm trying to imagine he might be great.
If he can convince me to buy a property, then I'll also take a tattoo to the face, Gareth. I'll take one.
Well, I'll tell you what else. So he may be bad, but all those other people that I showed you earlier, all those other girls, they're even worse. I'd rather buy from him.
I'd rather buy from him, not the girl, the candy shop girl.
Okay, show the Kiwis again, James. We need to see them again. Yes, I love them so much. Watch this.
Oh, are you waiting for the box to hit me? And we're waiting for you to call us to sell your property.
It's so bad.
That is.
Oh, Lord Jesus. It's so bad. Really? Ah.
At least you know how to do
it. She goes, are you waiting for the box to hit me? Right? And then, we're waiting for you to sell your property. I mean, imagine those two harpies arriving at your house and harassing you to leave your property to them so that they could sell it.
Oh, my word.
It's just appalling.
Also, what I'm finding weird is they're not showcasing properties they're selling. They're asking people to sell their properties.
Yes.
Business is that bad. Nobody's even selling their properties through them.
It's like, imagine a funeral director going around saying, come on, well.
Hey, come be cremated here.
Yeah, come and die, for God's sake. We got business to do.
Please.
Oh.
That is ridiculous. What? Joe, Gareth,
come on, Mash.
Gareth, I've been going through a lot.
Tell me, what's happening?
I've been going through it.
Well, you're in the right place, so tell us about it, because we love nothing more than to hear your going through a lot stories.
So, Gareth, you know body dysmorphia is real?
Body dysmorphia.
Body dysmorphia is 100% real. I always thought it's not a thing.
Uh-huh.
It is. For people who don't know, body dysmorphia is when you look in the mirror, everybody else sees you as being fine, but you look in the mirror and you think to yourself, ish, I could look better. Like, I don't like this.
Everyone has a little bit of it, which keeps us humble.
It does.
It's a good thing.
It does. But for me, it's holding me back, Gareth.
What do you see when you look in the mirror?
Gareth, okay, so first of all, let's show what I see in the mirror. Producer James, just pop up a picture. Look, let's just see what I see in the mirror first. That's what I see in the mirror.
You're thirst trapping, son of a bitch. Good. The only reason you want to show this picture is because you want people to see how good you're looking. Look at you. There's no body fat there at all. You used to be fat.
Yeah, I used to be fat. Right?
So you look in the mirror. What do you see when you see that?
Oh, when I see that, I think to myself, ish, the abs are not coming in. The V taper line is not there. My arms could be bigger. Why are they so skinny? That's what I see when I look in the mirror. That's how I perceive myself. And
yeah, but you know, okay, so Matt, what's happening here? I mean, I don't have to be a Dr. Hanan to figure this out.
Yeah.
You've gone from fat
100%
to being in shape and disciplined and having muscles in the right places and feeling good about yourself.
Yeah.
And now you're craving that feeling of feeling good about yourself, but you're already there. So you think, well, if I just push a little bit harder, then I'll love myself as much as I did when I looked in the mirror and saw how much progress I'd made.
100%.
And that isn't body dysmorphia.
What is that?
That's attention seeking. That's what that is. It's attention seeking, which is why you are posing in front of the mirror in your underwear. Sorry, that's what it is. I don't think you have body dysmorphia. Body dysmorphia is a very serious thing, and maybe you do have it, that you'd need an expert to tell you that.
Mm.
But it is a serious thing.
It is.
So you get people who are, they're in okay shape. They're not too thin or too fat.
Yeah.
They are not obsessed with fitness, but they believe when they look in the mirror that they are grossly overweight and that they need to go on a dramatic diet and that they need medication.
Absolutely.
Often body dysmorphia manifests at the extreme ends with things like anorexia, bulimia, even people who go the opposite direction, that they think they're too thin, so they just keep eating.
Yeah. They just keep using
it. You know? And it is a serious disease and it's a serious problem. And I don't know anyone who deals with it personally, but I can't imagine it's fun. I don't think it's fun to be around because that person becomes so obsessed with themselves as well that's really all they think about and maybe even talk about.
Oh, there's different obsession levels. And I've seen some of these obsession levels where it's all that's on someone's mind. It's all the food that they eat. They count every single calorie.
Absolutely.
They're obsessive. Yeah. Absolutely obsessive.
It's not good. And I think that we talk on the show quite a lot about looking after yourself and having self-respect. And that's good. That's important. But you also need to spend a fair amount of time looking around at the outside world. And I feel like because of the internet, and this is symptomatic of things like content creators, influencers, that these people are thinking about themselves all the time. They're unhappy. That's why they're unhappy. If you're self-absorbed 24/7, you're going to be unhappy because you're in your own head all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
That is 100% a fact. And you can see it when you watch content creators online, more especially. Most videos, I've actually said this to a friend of mine, that it feels like content creators are all, they all portray narcissistic behaviors.
Yes, they do.
Spend a day with me.
I mean, you think about it.
Get ready with me. It's all about
me. Those are the worst, right?
Yeah.
So, obviously, the internet is this pathological tool for attention seeking and for self-absorption. We all know this. And part of the problem is that it is a reinforcing mechanism.
It does.
If you are somebody who, let's say you've got a reasonably balanced life, you have busy and makes you feel like you have a purpose, you have people in your life who love you, you are learning things, generally your settings are good.
Yeah.
You're waking up in the morning and you've got a menu of stuff to do. And nobody's ever happy all the time, that's impossible. Mm-hmm. And nobody's miserable all the time, that's also impossible.
Yeah.
But let's say you've got a 50% happiness ratio at the moment and your life is, it's okay, it's not bad. Then you go online and you either tell a sob story or you post something funny or you are thought-provoking or you're trying to sell property or whatever, and you get a little bit of attention from strangers, ooh, and your dopamine goes up and yeah, you think, oh, people want more of this. And
yeah,
really, in truth, you want more of their reaction.
Certainly.
Yeah. And so you become a content creator. You go and buy a whole bunch of camera equipment. You spend a fortune. You're figuring out the algorithms on YouTube and Instagram. And then you find 3 months down the line that you're not getting the hits you used to get.
Yeah.
And you get depressed.
Certainly.
It's like something's being taken away from me. But it's something you never really had because you were just the trend of the day.
Yeah. That's how social media is.
It is.
You're popping to it literally as someone who hundreds of times. I've learned is it a process? What is it? I don't even know how to describe
can
it.
You,
but
can you get over it if nobody watches things? Like let's
oh,
say
I get
what,
over it quick.
Let's say one of your videos does hardly any views. You're okay.
Oh,
with
I
it.
Get over it quick.
No,
because
good. That's healthy.
One thing I've learned is that my life is not social media. Me, on, hence I use a different name on social media, Mashi. I'm not Mashian. Right. To me, it's a whole different identity, who I am online.
It's interesting you say that because I was going to save this for later on when I've actually got it up and running. But, you know, I want to get into smaller and smaller media spaces. I don't want to get into big – I don't want to participate in the clickbait and the – the competition for numbers. And
oh, no.
I'm over that stuff.
Yeah.
And I understand that that is one of the metrics that people use to measure things. But
yeah,
I wanted to go from millions in radio to hundreds of thousands in podcasts. And I want to eventually get to the thing that I'm building where it's literally limited membership.
Yeah.
Only that many places available. Mm. And if you don't get in, you have to actually wait for someone else to die, like Mark Zuckerberg will take them. But we won't allow dead people in. In order to take their place. In other words, it's getting more and more exclusive, not more and more inclusive.
Absolutely.
So I regard it. We did a video. I did this video this week for the Truth Report.
Okay.
And the guy was saying to me, oh, it's doing so well. I said to him, please don't tell me this. I don't care.
Yeah.
I really don't care. Mm. It does nothing for me because I've realized that all of this is very fickle and superficial. And it doesn't make a difference. And I'm just not interested in chasing those likes anymore.
Mm.
You eventually, as a kid, I suppose you get over going to the merry-go-round. A merry-go-round is boring.
Yeah.
A swing at the playground. Eventually you got in that swing.
Bored.
And you're like, I need a bigger swing. I need something
absolutely
more exciting to play on.
Yeah.
And I feel like the internet is getting like that for a lot of people. What was that story? James Flex, you guys might know, Mr. Beast was in the news this week. He's like the biggest YouTuber ever.
What did he do now?
I don't know if it was bullshit news or whatever, but he was complaining about being on the internet and how difficult it is and how he gives away all his money. And
why is he complaining about that?
I don't know. It might have been clickbait. That it might even have been fake news for all I know.
Yeah.
I don't think you can justify those numbers. When you have a video that has 4 million, 40 million, 400 million views, it could be a small number of people who are watching that repeatedly because they're psycho.
Absolutely.
You know?
And at some point, it stops even feeling like people.
It's bots.
When I get low amount of views, if I get like 200 likes or whatever, it feels like 200 people liked this. The moment I go over 100,000 likes and stuff, I don't even perceive
number,
them as people
right?
anymore.
Yeah.
And that's what happens when
totally
you're on
agree.
Social media for long enough, is that when you're always blowing up and stuff, you stop seeing people as people. And this is part of the reason why I've been switching over to YouTube, Gareth. I told you last time that I've started my YouTube channel.
Yes.
It's growing quite well.
Good.
What are we
looking like at the moment? How many videos have you done?
I've done 60 videos.
Shit.
Yeah.
Not bad.
In about just over a month. And I'm at 2,000 subscribers in a month.
Nice.
Yeah. So I'm already monetized. I'm living my best life in just a month. First month on YouTube. The whole of January, 1 month. So I think
that's
it's doing
excellent.
quite okay. And yeah, people seem to be liking the content. I'm glad about that. But one thing I'm picking up is that people on YouTube are real people. They're so invested. They want to engage with
you.
So you
prefer that
talk
to TikTok and Instagram? And
I prefer it way more. Also, I mean, the money's better.
are you earning money out of it?
Yeah, after a month. After a month already, I'm already earning money out of it. And it's actually way better, in my opinion. For example, your Instagram Meta, million views. I can disclose this. I don't think people know this information. Okay. So this is like first, nobody, all the content creators don't share this. Mm-hmm. So you guys are getting the exclusive right
now. All right, let's go. No, this is interesting. Go.
Meta pays 2,000 Rand for every million views. For every million views on
Meta?
On Facebook in particular, you get 2,000 Rand. So if I get 10 million views, I get...
I haven't got a fucking cent out of them. What am I doing wrong?
You haven't gotten a cent out of them?
No, what am I meant to? Am I meant to? Must I put my bank details in?
You have to
in?
Apply. You have to put your tax information in.
Oh no, SARS! I have to get SARS involved.
You have to get SARS involved.
Oh no, then they can keep the money.
So content creator,
I haven't. I've never earned a cent out of any of that stuff. I didn't know you could.
You do. So I make 1,000 rand for every. I mean 2,000 rand. Sorry, 2,000 rand for every million views. So every half a million views is 1,000 rand.
Wow.
Now. Then, it sounds like good money, but getting a million views is hard, especially consistently.
Yeah, it could pay for my dog food and, you know, maybe some water and lights.
It pays for the fuel, the lights.
Sure.
It pays for small things and sorts them out.
That's why all these real estate agents are doing these videos.
Absolutely.
Because they're going to, this is paying for me water and lights. Huh? Fuck.
People are making money. So, for example, one of my highest viewed videos on that side was, I think, 14 million views. That's about 28,000
Rand. That's not bad, Mash. That's very good.
So you're making decent amount of money. But the problem is you have to do that consistently. It messes
so YouTube
up with your
pays
brain.
Better than Meta.
It pays way better. And a million views on YouTube is like 130,000 Rand.
Really?
Yes. A million views on YouTube is 130,000 Rand compared to a million views on Meta, which is 2,000 Rand.
Okay.
But this is long form content views that I'm talking about, not even short form. Short form on YouTube is less, obviously. But I'm learning this all of this stuff. I've been doing the research and I've realized that damn, people on YouTube are like in. They're all in for you. They want to listen to you for an hour, 2 hours. They just want to, they're proper loyal supporters.
Because I think all of them are also content creators. There are too many creators and not enough viewers and listeners at this point.
That is true.
I reckon it will invert.
Yeah.
It will become a point where the audience is smaller than the number of people putting
Everybody's
out.
Everybody's going to be making content.
What are they calling this stuff now? Slop.
Yeah. Right?
Slop is the brain rot content that people watch in those endless loops.
Non-stop.
Where it just, you know, as soon as you finish the one video, the next video comes up. I listened to a fascinating conversation that Jonathan Haidt and a professor of, I think she's a pediatric neuropsychologist. So,
okay.
Or neuroscientist. I'm not even sure. But this woman has written a book about the development of children's brains and how the internet's affecting that. I mean, this is such an important subject. I think probably one of the most and practically useful fields of medical research going on right now, because we all know what this is doing to kids. We spoke about your brother just now getting an iPhone, and I don't think there's a parent in the world who isn't worried about what their interaction, their kids' interaction with their phones is doing to their ability, for example, just to concentrate, to focus. So they put these people in a room where they had them solving problems.
Okay.
It was either a maths equation or a language problem or something. They sit and here's the situation. You've got to solve the problem. Then they took a 10-minute break. And they divided that group of people into half during that 10-minute break.
Okay.
One half were sat down and they, you know, got something to drink and they got something to eat, but they watched TikToks for 10 minutes as their break. The other group went outside, stood around, had a fart, talked to each other, looked at the sky, you know, that kind of thing. The group who watched TikTok came in and their performance dropped in problem solving by 49% after just watching the slop.
Mm.
And the people who went outside and looked at the sky and maybe also had something to eat or drink or took a piss break or whatever, but didn't engage with social media, were able to solve those problems that they were busy with in the period before at the same rate. There was no drop in focus or in ability to concentrate.
That is wild.
So this shows you this is happening right now.
I've come to learn that what happens with social media and our minds, Gareth, is that the algorithm rewards dopamine.
Mm-hmm.
It rewards dopamine.
And the dopamine rewards more dopamine.
Yeah. So it's just an endless dopamine loop. Yeah. And what people don't realize is that these algorithms on these apps, on TikTok, on Instagram, when you're scrolling up, it doesn't pre-plan 10 videos for you. It doesn't go like, oh yeah, Gareth's going to like these 10 videos. They're set in stone. These are the videos he's going to get every time he swipes up the next 10 times. No. This algorithm decides on the spot depending on your engagement. If the video you're watching currently, you like it in the first 3 seconds, going to be like, okay, he likes this shit. Let's give him more of this
more
shit.
Of this stuff.
Yeah. And it literally analyzes every single interaction.
While we're on this subject, and by the way, if you're not interested in this, I mean, you're in the tiniest of minorities, which is not a problem.
Yeah.
I'd rather be in a tiny minority sometimes than in, you know, the group of morons who are doing all the time. But this is such a part of people's lives now.
It is. It is their lives.
I've noticed that I can get into that doom scrolling mood. And it happens to me usually over weekends where I know I have time. Mm. And then I'll watch something funny and then it'll serve me something funny after that. And then I'll just stick to it for like 2 hours. Before you know it, 2 hours is gone, right?
Quickly.
Shocking.
Quickly.
And especially if it's at night, because you think, oh, well, you know, what's the difference between 11 p.m. and 2 a.m.?
Next thing you know, your alarm is ringing and it's time
exactly.
to wake up. Exactly.
So I was watching a bunch of stuff the other day, but what I've noticed is I'm now much more of a passive viewer than an active. I used to like and I used to go, oh, I must follow this person. And now I watch the stuff and it's disposable.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not interacting with it the way that I used to.
You're not sending it to your friends.
No.
Same for me. Actually, Gareth, the truth for me is actually a bit shocking. I don't watch content.
You're just a maker. I'm just a maker.
And I've always said this to people, and people go like, I'm so addicted to watching content. I always say to them, make it. You'll stop. It'll make you stop watching it. Once you make it, you'll realize that it's not all that. It's not all that.
Tracy says, it's not just a part of our lives. It's a bloody big problem. Kids are addicted. Habits need to change.
Yes.
The other thing that came out of this discussion that I was talking about with Jonathan Haidt is that, by the way, he's written a kid's book, but it's equally applicable to adults about exactly this.
You know,
get outside, play in the sun, play in the soil, kick a ball around, do things. Don't sit there and doom scroll. But he was saying that in the interview that I heard, that adult brains, because some of us grew up without having the phone around us all the time. I mean, I don't know when you got your first one, how old you were.
I was 12.
12. Mm-hmm. He says too young. He says you should, at a minimum, and you know countries like Australia have now banned social media.
Yes.
For kids under 16. Mm. He reckons that probably it should be 18.
It should.
And that you shouldn't be on social media. You shouldn't be able to watch particularly the short form stuff.
Ooh,
he said that is the deadly thing. That's what makes you dumber. And it is actually measurably making us dumber.
Mm.
He said that's what you've got to be careful of.
Mm.
And the woman who was being interviewed at the same time said that her research has shown that if you can listen to or watch something that's longer form, and by that she means it's got to be substantial. It can't just be like watching people pop balloons or, you know, what is that mukbang bullshit?
Oh, no,
you can't, it's got to be something it teaches you.
Absolutely.
I think it could be teaching you a language. It could be teaching you about science or mathematics or whatever it is. It's teaching you things and it's longer form. She said, that's good for you.
Yeah.
There's nothing about that that's bad. And you can eat up all of that. You can be doing that for hours. Your kid will not get dumber. Mm. They will not become antisocial. But if it's the short form stuff, that is deadly. And obviously the worst culprit there is TikTok, right?
Oh, the biggest culprit. Yeah.
Because it just keeps coming.
They encourage it. Yeah.
And you watch one and then there's suddenly 20 Non-stop. And then there's suddenly 200. And you lose your mind.
That's why it's called brain rot.
Right.
It's literally rotting a person's brain. And Gareth, you see this in the kids because the one thing I've learned about dopamine in particular is that dopamine is not something you want to be spiking up unnecessarily.
You know what happens if you do? What happens?
You become desensitized, don't you?
Correct. Yeah. And eventually your ability to have the highs that you feel.
It becomes
harder.
Think about
this, all right? So the first time you ever had takeaways. When you were a kid.
I remember.
And you would go to the restaurant for the takeaways. Then the first time you got a delivery, you were like, ooh, this is so exciting. They're going to bring it to my house. Eventually, that became nothing. The first time they delivered a package from Take a Lot or wherever to your house, you were like so excited. It was like Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when some delivery, you're like, ah, just leave it with security.
Yeah.
And sometimes you even forget.
Even forget, yeah.
If you allow the dopamine to happen so regularly that you become desensitized to it, like a drug addict becomes desensitized to the drug.
Certainly.
Eventually, the way that it felt the first time you took it can never be redone.
Only your first hit of nicotine will ever be the best hit. Yeah.
So what you're also doing then is you're making yourself, your normal state, your default state is boredom.
It is.
Your default state, instead of being
yeah.
a fair amount of bored, but also a fair amount of excited. Mm. The excited's gone because now your expectation for excitement has been set so unbelievably high by watching bullshit and seeing constant stimulation on your phone screen that you actually haven't got a way to default set that down.
And that's how we end up with now these new generations falling into degeneracy, what it seems like, is that because they're so – The dopamine response is fried, Gareth.
So what do you mean by degeneracy? I mean, I find that interesting. I'm not going to argue with you, but what do you think it is?
Like, for example, I'm sure you've seen like the Catch Me Outside girl, for example.
Yes.
And just...
She's still a thing?
Apparently she is.
She was huge on YouTube for a while, wasn't she?
For a minute, and then she went to OnlyFans, and then she vanished for a bit.
Yes, that's right. She went to OnlyFans. Okay.
But one thing I'm picking up on is that these younger generations, they seem to have this more don't care attitude. They just don't care about anything. Like they have nothing to have passion about.
But they do care about people paying attention to them online.
That's it.
They really care about that.
That's all they care
about. They are dispassionate about 99% of things on earth.
Yeah.
Their own grandmother can fall over and, you know, into a trench and die right in front of them.
Yeah.
They'll be like, but if they don't get enough likes on a post, then they want to commit suicide.
I'll give you an example, actually. There's one girl I saw from America who, she got into a car accident, car literally rolled over, gets out the car, puts her phone there, starts dancing.
Oh, well,
because
you must
upside
be,
down with the wheel.
You must
spinning,
be joking.
With the wheel spinning.
Really?
There's a real video. I have to.
For fuck's sake. Really?
These people's brains are fried. They are fried. I'm telling you, Gareth. I see it mostly in America, but you know how it goes. South Africa is like maybe three to five years behind, always. So whatever's happening in America, our younger people are going to be catching on to that behavior soon.
So listen, Tracy says here in the comments, watch the interview on trigonometry, spells out the dangers of screen, gaming, phone, short video addictions. The effect on kids and adults is brutal. Yes, they're making people unable to concentrate, which we've covered, but it's also making people lethargic. They don't get up. They're sedentary. There's no drive.
Yeah.
Life is just sitting here mindlessly scrolling. That's what I do with all my spare time. Mm. Well, what do I need time for?
Yeah, and most of them end up as incels even.
Absolutely, and I think it's interesting that Tracy mentions the gaming there as well. Mm. Because we seem to have had, I remember, if you sat around a screen too much as a kid, your parents would eventually say, you need to go outside, you need to rest your eyes, you need to do something different, get some physical exercise, right? Yeah. Now we understand that with gaming, and I think everybody knows there's nothing good about an adult human being sitting in a nappy in a diaper, shitting and pissing while they're playing a game. We all know that's very bad.
Yeah.
If someone sat in a casino in front of a slot machine for that long, we would know it was bad.
Certainly, yeah.
But because this is with you and you're pretending to be doing other things, we don't say it's bad. It's ludicrous.
Remember that the kids who are gaming, the kids who are on the screens all the time, their parents are using those screens to distract the kids so that the parents can distract themselves as well.
With their own screens.
Everybody's distracting themselves from reality. It's your, this world that we're living in, Gareth. Hey.
Mushroom Farms, Mushroom Face says, Mash, I've seen your stuff. It's very funny.
Oh, I'm glad. Thank you so much.
And then Wade says, there is a dude that shuffles his false teeth on live for a living.
That sounds kind of entertaining.
Oh, that's revolting.
Showing off his gums?
No, no, no. I don't know if I like that. Okay, so we've talked about the estate agents and how they need to be stopped. But this woman who Flex briefly flashed to you a little bit earlier, there's something going on here. I want to see if you can pick it up. She's also, I think she's Australian, or she could be from New Zealand as well.
Okay.
Don't love the accent, but take a listen to how she talks and you tell me if you can pick it up. Go. Okay.
The best dating advice I have ever received. Good is the enemy of the best. And here's the gold, ladies. This applies to your shopping as well. Good keeps us settling. The best ends the search.
What about a beast? What
so,
beast?
So she's got a particularly strong accent, which is very irritating. So she basically says, good is the enemy of great. But there's something else she does. Did you guys pick it up?
Beast.
It's not a lisp.
Like she has an at the end. The beast.
So she says, good is the enemy of great. Play it again and you'll hear it. You'll hear how irritating this is. She does a at the end of every second or third word.
The best dating advice I have ever received. Good is the enemy of the best. And here's the gold, ladies. This applies to your shopping as well. Good keeps us settling. The best ends the search.
Right? Did you notice it that time?
Gareth, what is she saying? Like, seriously.
She says, if you get the good is the enemy of great when you're dating, and settling is the end of the search.
How did you even figure out she was saying that?
It's very hard. You have to listen. let me tell you something. I have an ear for language. I'm overseas. It takes me like 3 weeks and I'm speaking the language. But that is the most awful accent. I think she's a Kiwi.
Yeah.
Okay, so I need to understand why this woman drops in an after every sentence.
It's reminding me of the Kardashian vocal fry, but opposite.
Yes. But it's the opposite. It's also a voice tick.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a voice tick. And I need to know why she does it.
That is so weird.
That I'm going to tell you. Strange. Okay, so here's a story, and I'll try and do it like her. Okay. A New York City man, Mickey Barreto, has pleaded guilty to fraud after exploiting a housing law to live rent-free in a New Yorker hotel. And
in a hotel?
This is hard work. It must be very stressful for her to speak to anyone.
New Yorker.
Okay, I don't know. Again, this is the big problem I have. I watched a video yesterday, since we're on the social media thing, right?
Yeah.
This could be an actual news report, but it could also be AI. Have you got that SABC news story about the Mugabe? Yeah. So play that Mugabe. Quickly. So apparently, certainly this looks like the SABC.
Okay.
It's a news reporter. She's reporting live from a scene where, according to the story, Robert Mugabe's son shot someone.
Oh, geez.
A security guard.
Okay.
But it could also be AI. It might not be real. You tell me.
Okay.
You decide. Everybody gets to decide.
This is breaking news at this particular point. The allegation is that I can see that Balmain Mugabe, who is the son of the late former Zimbabwean president Robert Mugabe, right behind me. He is in handcuffs. The allegation, I must tell you, Mfundo, I do not have much details at this stage, but the allegation is that someone has been shot and has been taken to hospital for treatment, and Now, as a result, a couple of moments ago, police had been negotiating with Balamain Mugabe to come out of these premises where I believe he stays.
Hey, what? Couple of things we've got to deal with here. I'm sorry to nitpick on this one, but I think everybody who's listening and everybody who's watching heard and saw what I did. She also does the thing. Did you notice?
She does the thing.
We're reporting live from
shooting
the SABC, live from Robert Mugabe, son. That's a big problem. People have got to stop doing this. I don't know if I've just noticed it now, but we must clean up our language.
What?
Okay. Oh, so this we have got to clean up our language.
Oh, this is like real news as of 9 hours ago.
So it is news.
Yes.
So it's a real thing.
Absolutely. Okay. It's on Al Jazeera.
Second of all, what is Bob Mugabe's son's name? How do you spell that? Balentine? What?
It is Balamine Chatunga Mugabe.
How do you spell that? How do you spell that?
It's Bellarmine. So Bellarmine.
Bellarmine.
Chatunga Mugabe. The younger son of the late Zimbabwean leader Robert Mugabe.
Bellarmine. What a stupid fucking name.
This is in Hyde Park even. Hyde Park area
in
Johannesburg.
Yeah. So first of all, alright, we've dealt with the news report. It's clearly not AI, it's an actual story. Second of all, what a stupid name for Robert Mugabe's son.
Bellarmine.
Really. I mean, what?
Gareth, let's be
calm down.
That's one of the better Zimbabwean names out there.
Yeah, sure. They're all shit. And there are a lot of shitter ones, but that is that what does that mean?
I have no clue.
Nothing. Okay. Nothing. It means nothing. It's made up. Third thing, why is Robert Mugabe's son living here? His father fucked up Zimbabwe. He must live in Zimbabwe.
I think all his sons are living in South Africa.
All of them probably live
there. And they're
here.
All problematic.
And all in Hyde Park or Sandhurst.
And the wife was problematic. All of them.
Remember, she didn't. She
beat
a switch.
Someone with with an extension cable.
She did. She beat a woman with an extension cable, and then AfriForum had to help that woman sue her.
As a South African woman, I believe.
Yes.
Who
was like her maid or something.
The Mugabes, have they not done enough to this continent?
The Mugabes should shut up and be quiet. Now this one, according to that news report, which we've now established is real, this one has shot a security guard.
Absolutely. So it says here that the person he's shot is 23 years old. So it says the victim, reportedly 23 years old, was taken to hospital in critical condition. And two men, this is Gauteng police took two men in for questioning and subsequently arrested both individuals. They're expected to face attempted murder charges and will appear in Alexandra Magistrates Court soon. And the current status is that investigations are continuing, including searches for the firearm used in the incident. It has not been confirmed publicly which of the two arrested men fired the shots, though. So it has not been confirmed if it was Mugabe's son or who exactly was. But hey, we'll see. I'm not going to say that the Mugabes probably have money and they can turn things around, but let's see.
So Carl DeSantis says a Mugabe and a Prince Andrew were arrested on the same day.
Yes.
How the mighty have fallen.
The world is healing.
maybe if we just put away all these people. I'm absolutely astonished that a Mugabe would have the temerity to live here and then cause shit here.
Absolutely.
Like if you're going to come and live here, sure, we don't mind you spending your money on South African restaurants and South African cars and South African shops. That's good. Do it. But behave yourself.
Behave yourself.
I mean, you're not in your daddy's little
How would you know better when
feudal
his mother
kingdom.
Was beating South African women with extension cords?
So
how would you know better?
It's so embarrassing. It's so embarrassing. I know people that like adding ki to every word in a sentence, Mos, after a sentence for effect. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Ki.
Yeah, well, you know how those two examples we went, they drop in the
Yes.
But I've also noticed Zimbabweans like to, and we're not beating up on Zimbabweans today. Ben was very kind about how Zimbabwe has destroyed everyone in cricket, so we'll give them some credit.
What do Zimbabweans do? Is it about the beetrooti?
It's the end of the everywhere.
Oh, the beetrooti and butternutty.
Butternutty. Exactly. I'm going to city over there. You know what I mean? They do.
Yeah.
So there are different ticks clearly going on here all at the same time. What did the gardener do to his plants? I might not agree with it, but I know where he's coming from. I don't know what that's about.
Who's gardener?
Slippery pickle. It's not the gardener, the security guard that he shot.
I don't know who said gardener.
Yeah, no one said Gardner. And Wade is just correcting us. It's not Prince Andrew. It's just Andrew now.
Oh, so he's no longer a prince now.
No, he's
as
none of those.
As soon as you get arrested, you lose your title.
No, no, no. So they took away his titles, or he gave them up voluntarily a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he's just Andrew.
What? That is so sad. Isn't he like, how old is he also?
66 or 63. So check how old Andrew is, but he was arrested on his birthday, Mash, which
I
is.
I know, which is just
that's
the most
especially
sweetest
mean.
Karma.
That's, but it's so mean. Imagine you wake up on your birthday.
Yeah.
You're like, well, I'm not a prince anymore. I'm not the Duke of York anymore. Mm. Everybody in this country hates me. But at least it's my birthday. And then,
you know what they say about bills, Gareth? If you don't pay them today, you'll pay them later. And he has to pay the bill for whatever he was doing with Jeffrey Epstein up in there. So he's 60-something, but he has to pay the bill now. 66. Yep. Yeah. Gotta
pay
the bill.
So Slippery Pickle says, if we replaced all the SABC staff, like in that clip, with AI, it would reduce the burden on the taxpayer. I might not be against that.
It would.
So, I mean, I don't have an issue with that reporter, except for all her stuff while she's talking.
And the way she was like twitching and looking back and forth. I was like, is she running?
You think she's on meth?
I was like, is she running from the Mugabe stand?
Just play it again. I want to see meth. Okay, now we'll look at it, and I want everybody to try and figure out whether she might be on meth or if she's just nervous doing her job. All right, so here we go. Let's take a look.
This is breaking news at this particular point. The allegation is that I can see that Balmain Mugabe, who is the son of the late former Zimbabwean president Robert Mugabe, right behind me, he is in handcuffs. The allegation, I must tell you, Mfundo, I do not have much details at this stage, but the allegation is that someone has been shot and has been taken to hospital for treatment. And now, as a result, a couple of moments ago, police had been negotiating with Balmain Mugabe to come out of these premises where I believe he stays.
Well, I'm sorry. I still can't get over what a cuck name that is. apparently, Kim Jong-un of North Korea.
Oh, yes. Our bestie.
Is setting up his daughter, Kim Ju-ai, to take over when he's finished, when he dies.
Oh.
So there's going to be a woman. She'll be the first person in North Korean.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So he's keeping it in the family. It's going
keeping
to be
it
a
it's a family
Doesn't
business.
Doesn't he have sons?
It's a family business, man. No, I don't think he does. He's only got a daughter.
Wow.
So she'll be the new North Korean dictator once he dies.
I hope she's a Have you seen her? Have you heard from her? Is she available? On? Do you know anything about
it? I don't know. But, you know, the family values in that family are not great. Remember his uncle who stood against him? I don't know. His uncle.
He got unalived.
Yeah, he unalived him by putting him in a cannon and firing him out of a cannon.
Whoa.
Yes.
Whoa. Yes. That is ridiculous.
You don't mess around with that family.
What?
When they turn on you, they turn on you.
They turn on you.
Gets very ugly very quickly. All right, so let's take a look at this. I think you'll be interested in this too.
Okay.
Apparently, at the Winter Olympics, there are obviously a lot of athletes. These are people who are fit. They are skiing downhill at, I think it's 139 kilometers an hour.
No.
Yeah. Figure skaters, bobsled teams, all these things.
Everybody's fit.
They have burnt their way through 10,000 condoms in just 3 days. The first 3 days of the Olympics, and now we're, 2 weeks in?
Gareth, I don't blame them.
In the first 3 days, they pumped themselves through.
I don't blame them.
They went through 10,000 condoms in 3 days, Mash. Just the athletes. This is not people in the town or the chemist shop that's selling to everybody who's watching the Olympics and going there live for the weekend or whatever. Just the athletes.
Gareth, if you work hard, you got to play hard too, Gareth. As I've mentioned to you before, you work out a lot. Your hormones are crazy.
So you reckon this is normal?
I think this is normal.
Okay.
I think this is normal. I think this is great. They need to take out some of that, you know, some of that, yeah, frustration and yeah, from the training.
If you think it's normal, the International Olympic Committee say that it is unusual. It's much higher than they anticipated. Officials say supplies are now being continuously replenished to ensure the athletes' sexual health needs are met for the remainder of the games.
Good. They have to keep up with the athletes, Gareth. Gareth, when you're working out, when I can speak on behalf of the athletes and say, look, your S-drive,
I like the way you've already started self-editing. You say analyze.
Oh, I'm a YouTuber now.
S-drive.
Yeah?
So you can't say sex.
No.
You can't say sex. You can't say dead.
Yeah.
You can't say the... I know the rules are different for like normal videos. One, right?
We're live streaming. Yeah. Live streaming is way more relaxed.
Okay.
Like normal videos, it's...
Good, because I'm not going to fucking change my language. I could care less. Algorithm, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I've just come to learn that the more you swear, the more it reduces your
Okay, fuck
your
yourself
revenue.
Again. See? I'm not in this game to make money.
Yeah, so your S-drive becomes so freaking... Gareth, I've been a problem.
Really? I've since you started problem. Working out?
I'm also going
well,
through
I know,
because
you keep
condoms.
Posting pictures of you in underpants.
Yeah, and I'm going through 10,000 condoms as well.
Are you?
Yeah.
Mash, because you told us that the other day, and I just want to remind you that we're not all stupid and we do pay attention to you. You said you were going through a bit of a dry spell a while ago.
Yeah, that was momentary.
Is that over?
Yeah, that was momentary.
Now you are just busy.
Yeah, I've been quite busy.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't kiss and tell. You know, I've been
No, I don't expect you to kiss and tell. I mean, is it one person or different people?
Oh, Gareth, whoever, I have a roster, Gareth.
Oh, you have a diary full of appointments. Look at you. I'm very excited for you, Mash. I think that's great. I love it.
Yeah. So I don't blame the athletes at all.
Well, Wade says, let them get knocked up. They're the pinnacle of genes from all over the planet.
Mm. Absolutely.
Schumacher... I suppose you mean Michael Schumacher, pumped his way through two back in the day. Okay, I didn't know that. It's because the beds were better this year. Yeah, they gave them cardboard beds or something
in the past.
Time. Mm. What a disaster. Say the seven forbidden words, Gareth, says Slippery Pickle. Yeah, because it'll affect our algorithm. I mean, it's going to piss off the producers because they're always interested in these numbers. But shit, fuck, cunt, piss, cocksucker, motherfucker, tits.
Okay.
Those are the words you're not allowed to use. Lol, not as fun, but they confirmed it's because they're taking them as souvenirs. The Olympic athletes are taking them as souvenirs, says Alex.
We're taking what?
The condoms. So that they could say I was at the Olympics and I'm an athlete and they gave us these condoms. It's like it's something you can show the grandkids one day.
Gareth, I thought you meant like used condoms.
I
thought like they're taking the used condoms. They're like, yeah, look. So look, everybody.
Alex says they're taking them as souvenirs, but they'll take STDs home with them too.
What?
Well, what goes on tour doesn't always stay on tour, Mash. You know, if you meet some girl from Lithuania and you have one great night and then she disappears and you never see each other again, but you end up having an itchy crutch when you get home.
Ooh, that's a reality.
And by the way, I mean no disrespect to Lithuania. I don't know that they have a severe problem with any STDs. Don't you remember what Arnold used to say? I get the pump at the gym, and then I get the pump at home. Mash, you says both. Bitcoin Boot, is Grindr playing a factor here? Do you use that?
No, I haven't used Grindr in so long. It's been so boring on there, so I just gave up long ago.
But you're posting your pictures.
I'm not using social media either. Yeah, I would.
So
never.
How do you meet these people? What do you meet them at the coffee shop? Where are you meeting them?
Gym.
Are you walking? Oh, it's just at the gym. Oh, okay.
Also,
I
don't go to one gym.
Hold on a sec. Okay, so you go to a bunch of different gyms. Now I need to know your modus operandi here, because it sounds like you're getting lots of action. So you go to gym, and you meet other people at the gym.
Yes, I do.
Okay, and then.
Sometimes people just DM me and go like, I saw you at gym. They recognize
but do you swap numbers or?
They DM me and they go like, I recognize you from gym. I'll be like, oh, which gym? They'll be like, oh, I saw you at Eastgate on Monday.
Oh.
I'll be like, oh, okay.
And then do you check them out to make sure you'd be interested?
Yeah.
Because I mean.
Of course. Yeah. If I'd be interested, then I'll.
And then what, do you meet up somewhere else?
Yeah. Then we chat and then we meet up somewhere else. It's never at, no, nothing at gym. Yeah.
Okay, Mash.
Yeah, I'm well behaved, you see.
I don't think anything. Please, I was not casting aspersions on your character. I'm just delighted for you that you're getting some.
Yo, it's about time, Gareth. Yo.
No, good man. It's very good, Mash, as long as it's making you happy and keeping you healthy.
100%.
All right. Any plans for the weekend?
I'm just going to get up to my usual mashcapades, shooting YouTube content. YouTube has literally become my life.
Right.
I've even sidelined social media for a bit.
And the actual job, are you still doing that?
I'm still doing my actual job.
So you haven't become a full-time YouTuber?
No, but I've been doing the math and there's a timeline now. Yeah.
You want to get out of the normal job?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, listen.
Eventually.
I think it sounds like fun. But when you are chasing deadlines, having to post certain things.
Yes.
And eventually, as we discussed earlier, people get bored with everybody. They'll get bored with Mr. Beast one day.
Oh, they do.
And then you need to have something else you can do.
Yeah.
Because there's not enough traffic to justify all these creators.
Absolutely.
I think if we've learned anything today from those real estate people and everybody else, there's too many people online.
There's way too many.
Too many content creators online.
Yeah.
We don't need any more.
Especially too many bad ones.
Yeah.
Too many ones who are just copying what everybody else is doing. Nobody's doing anything original. So, yeah.
Okay, so you're going to spend the weekend working.
It doesn't even feel like work. That's the thing.
All right. It doesn't even feel like work to me.
It's so much fun recording my videos.
Okay.
And
if you say so. Tracy says, Mash is not the wedding crasher. He's a gym crasher. Such an innovator. Chaz would be proud. Okay. All right. We'll give you a break now. Chaz is getting his dopamine hit from the YouTube content. Listen, there are some wild and weird and crazy people who we would never have seen if it wasn't for the internet.
Certainly.
I am grateful sometimes when I see, like, you know, total meth heads and
people
who we would have just ignored.
Yeah.
We'd have driven past them in the traffic and missed out on how they didn't have any teeth at all.
Mm.
Now you can see them on Instagram.
The internet has given
everyone
a platform. People like Shane Dawson, people who are literally...
Who's that?
He's a big YouTuber, massive YouTuber.
Really?
Who I went down his rabbit hole. Turns out he's a massive racist.
Oh, he's a big racist.
He was openly racist all these years.
There's even room for them.
But nobody even
racists.
Picked it up. No, all these years,
amazing.
Nobody picked it up. Until years later.
What was he doing up to now that he hid his racism?
He was blackfacing every single day.
How?
He was talking like he'd literally paint himself black and be like, "Yo, Leticia." He was doing kind of stuff. And we were... I grew up watching him and I was entertained.
Shane Dawson, what?
Yeah. Look, I'll send you a link on WhatsApp, Gareth. There's a whole deep dive on him that's like 4 hours long. You'll watch it tonight. I'll send
it
to you.
And has it made him more popular? Oh, there he is. A strange looking dude.
Yeah. I've been going down these YouTuber
Shane
deep dives.
Lee Yor. His real surname is Yor?
It's Yor.
Yor. As in YAW.
Yeah, Yor.
I mean, I've got a friend from... Where is he from? He's from Ghana, called Yao. You spell it the same way, but Yor. The only time I've ever heard Yor is in helicopters. Alex, you're in the comments. You can correct me on this. Yor is a certain kind of movement in a helicopter, right?
It's a Yor.
YAW. Anyway, he's known as Shane Dawson, American YouTuber, actor, filmmaker, writer, and musician. He was one of the first people to rise to fame on YouTube. You see, you can't make your career YouTube, Mash. You'll end up like this. Then we find out you're a secret racist after like 5 years. He began in 2008 at the age of 19 and has garnered over 500 million views during the next 2 years. Well, who cares? It turns out he's just a... garden variety racist.
He was open about it. It was all over the feed.
Shane Dawson.
We were all blind to it.
So he hates blacks. Is that his thing?
It is. He's literally his thing.
Wow.
I'll send you a deep dive. I'll send you the link later. You'll watch it whenever. But it's very interesting.
Hey, he had a good run.
Oh, he had an amazing run.
How old's he now?
He's, I think, 35, 34, 35. Mm. And he's a freaking millionaire.
Yeah, he's aged 37.
Oh, he's 37 now.
Yeah, it's time for him to quit.
Yeah.
So he's too old. He's too old. So it was him, Jake Paul.
Yes, Jeffree Star.
Jeffree Star.
All these people rised around the same time.
And he did conspiracy theories.
Yes.
I better tip Ben off that maybe he's lost one of his main people who he subscribes to.
Damn it.
So you used to watch this guy now. Are you disappointed?
I'm more disappointed in myself, because now watching back and I'm like, damn, this was blatant racism. It was so blatant. Like, he was so blatant about it.
Do you care? I mean, if you liked his content?
I actually liked his content either way.
So, yeah.
So I feel like it's this thing.
You don't have to be his friend.
Yeah. It's this thing of the mob, because everybody else has canceled the person. You feel like, oh, maybe I'm a bad person for liking them. But it doesn't matter.
There are probably a whole bunch of people who wouldn't like me, but I'll still watch their content.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of people who don't like all of us.
A strange looking chap, this. I had no idea that he existed. I've never ever seen this guy in my life.
What? I'll send you a deep dive.
You know, sometimes I'm kind of proud to be ignorant.
Yeah.
I'll find out, for example, that we'll find out what yaw in a helicopter is, right?
Mm.
What that means. And here we go. We have an explanation for yaw, do we? Yaw sounds like what you says
yaw.
When something rotates around a vertical axis left or right, it's yaw. That's what it is. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Imagine spinning around an office chair. That's what it is. So that's yaw.
Yeah. Okay,
so that helps to explain it. I'm happy to learn things like that, and then I'm kind of proud of myself that I know something. But I'm also really proud sometimes to be completely ignorant of stuff. Like Shane Dawson. Thing. I am very proud of the fact that I had no idea in hell who this guy was until you told me this.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else I should not know about this morning?
I'll send you two links to their deep dives.
About his racism.
Yeah.
It's actually
very entertaining.
All right, fantastic. You have a good weekend trawling the gyms and making YouTube content. Mm-hmm. And we will see you in a couple of days' time, Mash. Thank you very much. Mashiane Sifuti.
Ciao, Gary.
Who took some time out of his very busy schedule of going through condoms like an Olympic athlete to spend some time with us this morning. Look at that picture. This is the kind of shitty posts on the internet. Yeah, look at him. Thinks that's easy. He thinks he's got body dysmorphia. Meanwhile, he's just got attention-seeking disorders. That's what it is. All right, Mash, have a happy weekend. Some of the other comments here. I would yaw until I yawn, says Wade. Wade, not sure if you're trying to be funny or if that's your attempt at being clever, but I'll give you credit where it's due. I did like your previous comment about how it's like saying you're surprised in South Africa. Yaw. Okay, very good. Mash is not posting these pictures because he thinks there's something wrong with them. He's posting these pictures because he wants people to take notice. Yes, that's. I think we covered that. All right, it is time to pay attention to someone completely different and someone who I've wanted to get in here for a long time because whenever she has me on her show, it lasts like a minute and a half and then I'm chased out of the studio as quickly as I arrive. I'm like, I just spent half an hour driving here. I'm not doing this anymore. So the last time your producer called, I said to her, listen, I love Lorenz's show. I think she does an amazing show. I know lots of people who watch it. But I'm not driving for 45 minutes, and then I get there, and I'm on for 5 minutes, and then you chase me out before I basically wave to you on the way in or out.
I know. It's
ludicrous.
Always too short, Gareth.
I know. Life is too short for TV. But for those people who don't know, Lorenza Eckhart has got, I mean, you've done your own show on CakeNet now for how many seasons? You keeps being renewed. It's terrific. You've done Carte Blanche.
Mm.
You're a runner. There's so many things to talk about here. How do you fit it all in?
I don't know. It's there's a saying that we've always had in our family, the more you do, the more you have to do.
Yes, this overachieving family, eh?
It keeps us out of trouble for the most part, but
we
enjoy being busy.
All right, so you're still enjoying the TV stuff?
I am. It's not about its challenges.
Do you find you get better and better at it?
No, I wouldn't say that. The nerves never go away, so it's always there. I think when it goes away, then it sort of means you don't care anymore. Like, I'll still break out in a cold sweat.
I just I listened to an interview that Bill Maher did with someone the other day, and you could just tell Bill just doesn't give a shit anymore.
I love him.
He's terrific. I mean, he puts a lot of effort into his real time.
He's very well
real time. I don't miss a show because I think he, particularly that new rule thing he does at the end where he, you know, his last one, which is kind of a social commentary, but with a huge amount of humor and a lot of thought. He's put a lot of work.
You're
kind of
like the South African version of him.
I don't know. I mean, that would be a compliment if I were doing political commentary. So thank you.
You do.
No. I mean, I'll comment on it from time to time. I also, we'll talk about this in a second. I want to hear what you think about the state of affairs and whether it's more interesting or not. But Bill Maher does this thing where he works really hard on that show. I think you do too. I can tell you put a lot of effort in. It's not someone gives you a script and you just read it.
No.
But there also is something funny about kind of when you get a guest in the studio. I've seen it happen with you once or twice too. And you could just tell that they're not serious people.
No.
And you could sit there and you could try to be serious with them. But then you start looking stupid after a while because you're taking a moron seriously, right?
I know. It's difficult because, like you've said, we don't have a lot of time. I wish I could dedicate an entire show to one issue, one topic.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think it is actually warranted. But if we had more time, we could just sit there and go into it. But unfortunately, that's not the format of the show. And
Did you feel pressure? Because I'm sure you had a lot to say about how the show would be put together. Again, they wouldn't hire you to just do a presenter role. So when it came to putting the show together, did you feel pressure from what Mash and I were talking about just now, social media, where everything is short and you have to keep people's attention and their attention span has shrunk to this. And if you talk about the same subject for more than 5 minutes, they'll get bored and they'll tune out and then they'll go to someone else. And this is the problem.
There was this old sort of saying that we had, you know, anything longer than 7 minutes is going to be deadly, you know, in terms of.
Wow. Attention. It used to be a TED talk was 14, 15 minutes. And then that was too long.
I know, but look at like, you know, the podcast space and all of that. So on the one hand, long form is doing so well. And on the other hand, people are on their phones. And I know that they are watching my show with their phones in their hands. It's just two screens.
All right, so they're not concentrating.
No, so I'm aware of that. But I think, you know, we've sort of bucked the trend recently where we've made our segments a bit longer, where we've gone over two segments if we feel it's warranted. And if we have a big panel with a lot of people and you've got nice energy, I think there's still so much to be said for that. People want to tune in to see real human beings interacting with each other. So it's not just you interacting with your screen or whoever's talking back at you. It's sort of watching, you know, experts or interesting people talking about stuff, debating issues and you know, not always agreeing with each other. And I think that, you know, I think sometimes you find, you know, you're on your phone, you sort of look up and you see something's happening there, and it does have a way of pulling you in. So I think in certain instances, we do go longer, but with other things, we know to keep it short. Like when it comes to the economy and stuff like that, it's always difficult.
Yeah, it's so important because it affects us, right? So we need to be paying attention to this stuff. But when the minute you talk about the economy, most people's eyes just glaze over and they
you can tell them like, this affects you. This really affects you. Please take notes.
This is going to be important. And they still go,
maybe not.
I had the funniest thing happen when I was on your show last time.
Ooh.
No. It was. I love your show. It's very professional. You got an awesome team there. I like the fact that it's quick because you're in, out, done. You know, there's no kind of hanging around for hours and hours. But I arrived, and I think there were three segments, and you had old Kopduk. What's his name?
Piet Krookamp
there before. So I was standing outside with the Minister of Correctional Services, Pieter Groenewald, and with. And there was someone else there as well. I can't remember who that was. And someone brought up, because it was the night of Trump's inauguration.
Yes, that's right. That's why we had you on, right?
So this Krookamp guy started going. He was basically losing his mind. I mean, he was screaming and shrieking because obviously he wasn't happy about Donald Trump being elected. And he was talking about, grab her by the pussy, and what a terrible person this is. And I was standing there with the prisons minister, and we were both watching this guy melt down. It was unbelievable. I mean, I wish that was the show because let me tell you,
I sometimes wish that we could have a camera in the green room or even in the minutes just after.
This guy was melting down and he was swearing at me.
He does that online sometimes.
How dare you? How dare you defend? Oh, I said to him, I'm not defending anybody. This guy's just been elected president of the United States. Turns out you're wrong on 99% of the predictions you've made. You're getting cross with me. I don't have a dog in this fight.
No, he's very he can get emotional, and he's
I just wish you'd seen it. You would have found it very entertaining.
Maybe we should change the show and just have it be a green room.
Just have a little camera there.
I know.
I mean,
ratings gold.
And it doesn't cost you anymore. You're already producing the other shows, so you might as well have this
just
one.
Just have a little, like just the Big Brother cameras.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone in the switching room just doing that.
Maybe.
Be very easy to
good
do.
Good idea.
Lorenza, I'll take it up behind with the scenes. Yeah, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
This would be good.
Well, overtime, you know, like Bill Maher has with
yes,
his guests.
Yes, exactly. All right, so the carte blanche thing, I was surprised because I didn't know you were doing that as well. You know this, I don't watch a lot of TV, and when I do, it's usually when I go and visit my parents or whatever, and they've always got you on, and that's how I know your show, and I've watched a number of episodes of that. But I didn't know you were doing the carte blanche stuff. So that's pretty cool. That's a cool gig. I mean, it's always been a very prestigious role in South African television, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was a dream come true. And I still kind of, I can't believe it that I'm allowed and that I have the privilege of doing this. And the show's also gone through many changes of late. Derek Watts is passing. I mean,
I'm kidding, man. Obviously,
that was the first time, and
Shame.
You think about
he was
institutions.
Such a nice man.
Oh, he was just the best. And you know, if you think about institutions, I mean, he was an institution.
Yeah,
Rula Landman was an institution, and the show was an institution. So yeah, those
listen,
like
the audience loved this, but Rula was on the show maybe a year and a half ago or a year ago, and she started lecturing me because I did an accent, and she said I was
not
mocking
sensitive.
Nigerians or whatever. I mean,
I was a bit quiet with you.
Yeah,
okay.
Say my uitgekak. So she did. Anyway, everybody loved it, including me.
Okay, you love a little bit of her.
But she seems to like. Ruta's entering her like serious old lady age.
Well,
now.
She's always been very serious.
That's true.
Yeah,
but she did always have a sense of humor. I mean, she was very lectury with me that day, which was hilarious.
I think when people are so passionate about things and passionate about what they feel is important, you know, it does sometimes come into conflict with what other people feel is important. And
well, how
know,
do you choose your guests? Because you want those people who are passionate about things, because they're the ones who will, like Piet Krookamp, they'll go crazy about something because they feel it deeply, right? So you want the emotional people, but you also want the very logical, very sensible people.
Well, I mean, it's difficult because, you know, we are in what I've heard is being termed the entertainment economy or attention economy. Mm-hmm. Everyone's fighting for eyeballs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always this sort of balance between giving people an interesting, insightful segment, discussion, conversation, but also, you know, as my predecessor and the big boss that inmate Valdemar Palser always says, the biggest sin you can commit in television is entertaining. So at the end of the day, we are a visual medium and it needs to be entertaining. You need to grab people's attention and to find the balance between being entertaining, being insightful, interesting and responsible is sometimes difficult.
But you seem to do something that very few people in TV get right, is that you are entertaining but you're also well-informed and serious about the issues. Credible. And you're trustworthy, you know? And trust is sadly lacking in the media world right now. We don't know who to believe.
I know.
We don't know who is trying to sell us something, who's doing what they're doing just for the clicks, who's competing in that attention economy, and who's trying to do a job of uncovering what's really going on, or explaining, which is very often what your show does in terms of a very complicated political, social, economic environment.
Very.
We don't always know how to navigate that, so we need someone to help us through it. And you seem to get that right.
Well, I mean, I think the most important thing for a journalist or anyone sort of in that space is to remember that you need to put yourself in the shoes of your viewers, your listeners, your readers, whatever it might be. don't elevate yourself to some kind of position, which I think in the past, sort of the, as we like to term them, the mainstream media and traditional outlets perhaps have done, to remember that you are also still just, you know, a South African citizen also trying to navigate this. Be honest with your own shortcomings, your own biases and all of that. But I mean, I agree with you, Gareth. There needs to be a bit of a reckoning in terms of why the media have lost trust to the extent that it has. A lot of that has to do with how South Africans and people over the world were treated during the COVID pandemic. I think once you willfully lie to people because you think you are protecting them against themselves, or, you know, and I'm not ascribing evil intentions to the institutions that, did that, that continue to do
I
that.
I think people, a lot of people were very confused.
Confused and
a
scared.
A lot of people were very caught up in the hysteria.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of, I think, insidious, nefarious people saw an opportunity to grab some power.
Absolutely.
I mean, I still will. It seems to have gone away, but the PPE scandals. Do you remember that woman in the president's office whose husband got some multi-million rand contract to supply masks?
Yeah.
Or some shit like that. And it's just, yeah, we kind of have moved on.
I mean, and
unbelievable.
And this is Bill Maher's line, right? The point that he made about the outbreak, to say that this can, this should be attributed to people eating bats, like that is somehow better than saying that this was developed in a very sophisticated, far advanced scientific lab. How is that the better line?
Well,
and now we know
the people
that
who said that were even accused of being racist because they said, oh, it's very anti-Chinese, what you're saying. It was developed in China.
By very smart people.
Right.
So, I mean, again, so I, you know, I think just to come back, I think if you lie to people because you want to protect them against themselves, you know, regardless of your intentions, I think the consequences are catastrophic. You lose the trust, and I'm not sure whether you can ever get that back.
I mean, it's interesting because in America at the moment, and I'm more interested in American politics, not because I am a fan of any particular person in American
politics. You're not a fan of Trump.
No, I wouldn't say I'm a fan. I think that he's the most consequential politician of our lives. Right now, there is not a single person I can think of
in history of history.
And he's look at what they just did with Maduro. I mean, those are stories that will be told 100 years from now.
Don't you also just
no one's going to remember Biden, half dead carcass, walking around
again,
falling over on a bicycle.
I mean, I've read those two very important books about the Jack Tapper book, Jake Tapper's book, and all of that. And then, I mean, that they were ready to put Biden in a wheelchair. Should he have gotten a second term? I mean, that should have been.
Have you noticed? Has he made a single appearance since he stepped down?
But this is come back to the
he's
point.
Clearly,
no, I mean, he's
completely deranged.
So to say, like, we are going to pretend that he's okay because he's the better choice in terms of Trump.
So this is what I'm getting to.
So we are going to punish you because
this follows on from what we were talking about now. And I want to hear what you think of this because you've opened this can of worms, which I think is fascinating. In America, there seem to be two camps. There are people who live in reality and want the truth. And even if the truth is unpleasant and it makes them uncomfortable, they want to hear it. Mm. They'd rather be forewarned and forearmed.
Absolutely.
And then you get a bunch of people who would prefer to live in fantasy, where they don't mind if they're lied to or they're lying to other people, as long as everyone feels comfortable. And it seems that the one group is prepared to do whatever it takes to maintain power, and the other group And this is not along party lines or in support of a particular candidate. It's to do with your view of reality. It's to do with how you see the actual world unfolding around you. And to watch these two different points of view interact with each other, because, you know, it's almost like matter and antimatter. They annihilate each other, right? It's always, there's always going to be
one
violence and
hole.
Energy and all of this stuff. That, to me, is what's interesting.
I know.
Not the politics itself. I couldn't give a damn about what bill they're trying to put through Congress.
But people don't care about that anymore. And I think to come back to the point, or if you – it's not clear to me that there is a group that is comfortable with being lied to. I think
– Oh, yes, there is.
If you've been lied to –
Oh, yeah, there are people
enough,
who do.
Yeah, but
the same people who were the stay safe, stay home people during COVID.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
They want to be lied to. They want to just make me feel good.
Make me feel good.
And no, it's the same people who are watching all of this brain rot online. They just make me feel good. Yeah. I don't want to deal with reality.
Yeah.
They're not people like you and me. To us, that's anathema. We could never do the job we do.
No, we couldn't. We could.
If we were those kind of people. But yeah. I can guarantee you it's half, if not more than half, of all the people on the planet. They just want to feel good.
But again, and to come back to the media landscape, I am sad about what's happening to media institutions with the layoffs at the Washington Post, all of that. And I know we're talking America at the moment, but it's the same in South Africa. The media landscape is very fraught. There isn't a lot of resources. So on the one hand, I am sympathetic, but also not in terms of mistakes that have been made and you know, willful dishonesty by some of these institutions.
Right.
And they haven't apologized for the role that they've played in some of these things, not only COVID, other issues as well. And then you also sort of have the argument, but you need to get with the times, be as entertaining as the platforms you're competing against. But is it possible to compete with these algorithms? It's the smartest people of our generation are building these systems.
So
we can't go up against them.
I don't know what the answer is.
I don't know either.
I do like that there are – we were talking about Ruda just now. I like that there are serious people in the world. I like that there are academics and there
absolutely.
Are
people that dedicate their lives to one single issue. And
that are not entertaining at all.
No.
I don't want them to be a clown. No. I don't want to have them do a fucking tap dance in front of me. I want them to say to me, this is how economics works.
Exactly.
I want people who are completely uninteresting in every other dimension, but they're so good at that, that if you sit with them for 5 minutes and you concentrate, you will learn a tremendous amount.
But those people are valuable. Learn?
No, but everybody's online now. I mean, we were talking before you arrived about estate agents. Okay, they're all posting
these terrible videos.
No, it's not entertaining.
Well, I mean,
I don't want the worst way. They must sell property quietly. They must get on with their business.
But what are the biggest reality shows on TV? It's selling stuff, selling sunset, selling this, selling that. There's too much entertainment,
Lorenzo. This is what we're getting to.
Reality.
It's too much entertainment. We have, you know how we talk about an information era where we have a wealth of information.
We should be very smart.
We should be very smart, but we're not. And we've got a wealth of entertainment, but you've still got people who are bored and doom scrolling through brain rot.
I know, but it's sort of like when
this is why you can't give them money, because then they'd also be losers, except losers with money. And
but they have
find
a lot of money.
It.
I mean, it's. I mean, my brain explodes when I hear about the amount of money that some of these influencers and online people make just by, you know. And
I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about all of us. If we started a universal basic income, or if and look at how welfare has made Europe. It's made it worse and lazy.
Should we give people free
money? Don't give people anything for free. If you gave young men between the ages of 15 and 25 each $1 million, do you know what they would do with it?
Gamble.
Yeah. They'd go online and they'd gamble. It's
easy
a major
come, easy
problem
go.
At the moment. So you would not help one of those people.
No.
And governments that think they can help people by giving them money for free are stupid governments.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
So we've got an information overload. We've got an entertainment overload.
If you did have
a money overload, you'd also have a negative result. It wouldn't be a good thing.
No.
What we do need is specialists and serious people.
Do you know how old we sound, Gareth?
I know, but
I don't say
I want to be those people.
No, but I mean, I feel like we're not giving away our age, but I feel like this ages me.
You're not old. You're younger than me. You're much younger than me.
But I mean, to say like, people should know what it's like to work for something, to have that reward at the end of the day. You know, a good day's work, an honest day's work.
These are truths.
I know, but it makes us sound old because you have like, you know, young people, I guess, listening to this going, okay, boomer. And they're like, well, I just made thousands, by filming myself doing something. And it was, you know, easy.
Yeah,
and
I think
I'm going to go gamble and I might even win a decent amount.
Yeah, you could.
This is where we
are. But they're not going to be happy.
That's the thing.
I would like,
that is the truth.
I would like happiness to be a worthwhile goal to strive for.
Instant gratification. How do we get back? How do we, I mean, are we off the cliff? Can we bring it back?
What do you think?
I don't know.
What makes you happy?
I can only talk for happiness. What gives me happiness is spending time with my loved ones, doing something that I feel is worthwhile, working towards a goal. And it's always when you reach the goal, that's never the satisfaction. It was always the process. It was always like, you know, the graft and just getting after it. That's what brings happiness, I think, for everyone. And also, we shouldn't be happy all the time.
No, exactly.
Sadness and being unhappy is an inherent part of life. And yes. we shouldn't try to numb that.
People try to medicate it and they try to diagnose it as a problem that you aren't happy all the
time.
It's ludicrous.
Go and sit. There is obviously a place for, you know, mental health experts and talking about this. But don't ruminate on stuff. Accept that part of life and of existence. Build it into, you know, your fabric. And then the happiness, when you get to that, just means so much more. But, I mean, I obviously understand that it's not – there are people that have trouble.
So do you derive – and I know it's not fair to compare them, but do you derive as much happiness from – when you know you've just done an absolutely fucking great show, it's just worked. You've had tremendous guests. Everything's gone exactly according to plan. You said something that you thought, I need to say this, and you got it in at the right. Ooh, you didn't forget something at the end of the show because it's live for you, where you go, oh, damn, I forgot to mention that, or I didn't bring this guest in soon enough, or whatever the case may be. That happiness after a really good show, how does that even compare to like going for a run? Because going for a run seems to me like the most boring thing you could ever do. And you do this for fun.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
You've
so
stopped?
Much. Well, I mean, not stopped.
Have you hurt yourself?
I've paused. No, I mean, we recently had our first baby. So sleep goes out the window.
Okay, no, no,
and
that
also, I don't want to go out on a Saturday morning and run for 3 hours. I'd rather be spending time with him. No. He's just the coolest dude. So that sort of changed and priorities change and shift.
When did you have the baby?
A year ago now, yeah.
I didn't know anything about this. My producer's so useless, he didn't tell me either.
No, I mean, it's not very online. I'd like to shelter.
No, that's good.
Our kids from.
So I'm thrilled to hear this because you know what happens. Runners start looking terrible after a while.
I know.
You don't want to look like that.
My mom always says to me, like
biltong.
I won't name the names, but she always refers to these famous runners. And she's like, is this what you want to look like? But no, just to come back to like working towards something. And you talk about like the happiness that or the satisfaction you get after a good show. It's fleeting because it's sort of part of the bigger process of building towards something and honing your craft. I don't really think I'm ever going to get to a point where I think, this is perfect. I'm doing this job perfectly well. I think it's always for me going to be in the striving, you know, trying to get to that point. It's like trying to run.
Is motherhood a bit like that? Because you are also, there's no guidebook. There's no 10 out of 10 score on the test at the end of it. It's always a bit of a guessing game.
It is a guessing
game. Every kid is different. And I mean, I know moms who've got like 3 or 4 kids. Yeah. And they're like, each one of those children has a different scorecard.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I did pay attention to it, I'd go crazy.
It is. But again, that's also part of the beauty of life is you just don't know. The uncertainty is built in. Like you can be the biggest control freak.
Yeah.
Kids come along and they just wipe all of that off the table. Planning, you know, we're going to do this. And if I just have all of this in place and this will be perfect, it doesn't work like that. So it's extremely liberating. Or that has been in my case. So
I reckon the pressure's on for your kid because, you know, you have a mom like you. If your son ends up being an underachiever, it's going to be it's going to be devastating.
No.
he's never going to make it through school. It'll be a disaster. Like if he's not smart and
confident, we know he's the smartest. He's the most gifted little boy. So he's obviously going to be. He's going to be the best. So pressure, but anyway.
But to go back to the running, when you were still doing that, you did take it seriously.
Yeah.
You're very competitive. You want to win.
I don't know if I'd call it that.
You like that in broadcasting.
Yeah.
That's for sure. There's nothing wrong with it.
You should be honest about that part of
Yeah, you don't want to be
the ambition.
You didn't want your show to be some also ran you know, sad kind of consolation prize. You wanted it to win.
That's the feeling I got when I went in there.
I didn't think I'm on some second-rate show here.
Yeah.
This is fucking real.
Yeah, so take it seriously. And I guess as I've gotten older, when I look back and you think about sections of your life and your career that have been really sort of, you know, where you've really worked hard and you've made a lot of sacrifices in terms of time and how you, you know, what your approach should be, I guess I look back and I should be honest about the fact that there is a big sort of ambitious element to all of that. Like you want to do good, like you want to not be the best. I think that's perhaps not completely honest, but you want to be the best that you can be. Okay, but this sounds a bit airy-fairy now. But looking back, I think – so I'm actually struggling with this now. It's like would I have reached those positions if it wasn't for that sort of inherent drive and ambition and taking things seriously?
No.
I don't think so.
Where do you think it comes from? Is it a thing that was your parents when you were growing up? Is it in the genes?
Maybe the genes. That's an important thing. You know? Like, listen, we see that now with
all of us. The fact that we're genes, alive that's a today real thing. Means our ancestors were winners.
Exactly. They've been winners for as long as humans have been around.
Because
yeah.
if they weren't winners, we wouldn't exist. Be, yeah. We'd be food.
No, my parents were never very pushy in anything. They've always sort of said, listen, what do you like? What do you like to do? And I've always enjoyed reading, and there was never a cap on the amount of books that they would buy. Or I loved sport, and there was never a cap on getting us the best equipment and stuff like that. So, and like, you know, travel. This is a big part of the way we grew up, is like to show us the world. Like we didn't have the biggest houses, the fanciest cars, but we traveled a lot. And I think that was part of it. So just to find something you like and nurture. I think that's also the approach we'll take with our son, is not to be too pushy. But also there are times when, you know, I didn't want to go to practice, or I didn't want to do certain things or go on shows. This was before I had my own show, and my mom would just say, yeah, my poppy, jy moet dit maar net doen. So I think it's finding a balance between a bit of pushiness, but also, you know, just recognizing in your child what it is they like, what it is they enjoy. I don't know, how was it for you growing up? Were you
I was a megalomaniac for a long time. No, really, it's very scary. There's an embarrassing story. I don't even want to tell it necessarily.
Oh, please tell.
No.
You have to tell us now.
So I was a kid in nursery school.
Oh, that far back.
Yeah.
I imagine you as like Family Guy, like Stewie.
Yeah. So I was sitting in the sandpit or something. This is the teacher relayed this story to my mother. I wasn't aware of any significance for the story or anything else. And she said to me, "What do you want, Gareth?" I think she was asking what we want for lunch or whatever. So I said, "I want this." And I held up like a handful of sand. And she said, "Well, you could play in the sand as much as you want." I went, "No." She said, "Well, what do you want? You can have, you know, all the other stuff on the playground." I went, "Everything." As like a – no, seriously, as a three, four-year-old. No, it was a big problem, hey? Luckily, I think that's gone away. I never had – real ambitions to get into.
But you've also wanted to be the best, right? I mean, I remember listening to you on radio.
Yeah, and
there was a level of confidence that it was just refreshing and also.
There was a point where I would have done anything to win at whatever I was doing and decided it was a worthwhile goal.
Mm.
I think there's still a little bit of that. Mm. It's never going to go away. But you have to temper it, because otherwise you are willing to be ruthless and you'll destroy anything you have to in your path, you know.
I think the challenge is in our industry, where we have an audience and a following, and
my audience give me such shit that
they keep you grounded.
Sure, I cannot get away from. They call me in and haul me over the coals when I'm doing a bad job.
Oh, but I mean, I don't think I could handle that though.
No, but you do. You have an audience. So you were saying
have an audience. Just to be liked, and you want to do a good job, and you like the feedback, because there is constant feedback after every show. There's feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think there's this, I think for some people that can be a bit destructive. and you can chase that. And sometimes it's sort of like, okay, I'm not going to say this because then perhaps they won't like me anymore.
Have you ever given in to that pressure?
No, I wouldn't say that, no. But it sometimes it is in the back of my mind, and you have a conversation, and it's necessary to be very honest with yourself. And I have a very good team, and we check each other. I think that's important. And also just, you know, family and friends that keep you
grounded. How much do you pay attention to, you know, the comments after a show, the social media stuff?
Not a lot. I'm not on social media. But
at
my
all.
Team, no. Well, I mean, I'm on Twitter a little, well, X.
But you use it as a resource.
Yeah, I don't.
I'm not looking at your opinions.
No, I don't post. No, yeah. No, I don't do that.
I haven't been doing that now for about 3 or 4 months at all.
And?
I have not posted or retweeted or anything for like 3 or 4 months. Easiest thing in the world.
It's lovely.
It's like when I gave up drinking. The only problem is that when you meet drunk people and you're sober, they're really irritating.
Yeah, I know. Have you completely given up?
No, social media. Well, I just don't. I don't derive.
No, I mean
anything
drinking.
From, no, I did that for 3 months just as a test. No, I'm not going to stop completely. I think one of the most important things in the world is that you are able to do something that will kill you and you enjoy it.
We should all
and
have
I,
advice.
I, it's better that than smoking weed, which I've never done, or taking drugs. You know,
No.
I mean, there are lots of things that are bad for you.
Yeah,
I don't think you've got to live this ascetic life either. Mm. I try to be healthy.
Yeah.
But occasionally I'll eat something that I think, shouldn't have had that chocolate.
Isn't that just the weirdest thing, like these people? Who's that guy who's dedicated his life and his fortune to looking younger?
Oh, yeah, he wants to keep living.
Brian Johnson. Yeah, he got a blood transfusion from his son. And
yes,
like,
what a weirdo.
Isn't that just – but, I mean, I do find that very interesting.
Well, I think we're probably – I don't know if we'll make it, but the likelihood is that anyone who is born – your son, for example – will probably live to about 120.
Mm.
Now, I don't know what a 120-year-old looks like. But I suppose just like there is a good 60-year-old and a bad 60-year-old.
I think there are 60-year-olds that look 120. So.
Sure. And you could get to 120 and be good. You know, medical science is going to enable.
Can I ask you, like, health is one thing, but like looks. Are you concerned and worried about getting older, looking older?
No, I went to
a very good plastic surgeon.
No, but I, you know, there was somebody the other day who said to me, "Oh, you're looking really old."
Oh,
which I thought, obviously they hate me. So I mean, I think I look like a movie star. I go to the mirror in the morning and I'm always disappointed. In my head, I think I look way better than I really look in real life. So when I see myself in a mirror, I'm like, "Oh fuck, that can't be right." Seriously,
it's a mistake.
And the older I
must
get,
be the lighting.
I mean, like I like myself. I mean, I don't.
Do you think you'll get to a point where you'll consider having work done?
No, I like myself. I don't like my looks. I've never liked my looks.
Okay.
I will find so many things wrong.
Oh, okay. That's you.
You will too.
Yeah,
everybody does. But I'm okay. I'm more comfortable in my skin than I've probably ever been.
Oh, that's great.
I was a very awkward teenager. I think I found in my 20s, I just was never happy about anything.
Smart people have a hard time.
I don't know if it's smart.
Especially a mini Bonaparte, Napoleon.
I don't know if it's smart. I think it has nothing to do with smart. I know some extremely beautiful people who are really, really stupid. and they're great. They're fun to be around.
Happy.
And then I know some, yes, they're happy. They're genuine. Have you not met a mongoloid? Mongoloids are the happiest people in the world.
Yes, you got it.
They don't know what's going on. Do you think they worry about
the economy? Give you a Ruda lecture.
No, they exist. Down syndrome people are in the world. They're some of the happiest people in the world. They're not worried about the IQ, the average IQ in Belgium.
Mm.
They're like, I'm happy. And they are. Yeah. And good for them.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
You know
what's sad for me? I read a study that they're trying to eradicate Down syndrome in Iceland, where you have genetic testing to make sure that the society.
Okay.
And I don't know, that to me is very concerning.
I think you might be a bit like playing God.
Exactly.
So there will be a point in the future, and having just had a baby, you could talk about this with like feeling.
Mm.
You've got a stake in this, right? I think there's something amazing about nature putting together the ingredients from this nucleus of the of this sperm cell with this nucleus of this egg cell. Mm. And there's a randomness to it, which you could call God, you could call fate,
but there's also a design. Chance.
There's a design. I mean, this is sophisticated information technology that we haven't even discovered in the best computers that exist, right? The ability of this DNA molecule to replicate itself is a phenomenon. They say it is still the best information-keeping device. There is nothing Microsoft or Elon Musk can build that will keep information. And
he's building a big family, an army of kids.
Oh, yeah, he's having a lot of kids. But he's also having them with random women. I think he's doing my joke experiment used to be, I'll have kids with – 5 or 6 different women, and then whichever kid is the winner, I'll keep, and the rest can go to for adoption.
The winner? What do you mean the winner?
Well, like the smartest, the most looking. Athletic, the everything. Okay. That one we'll keep. The other kids can go to the orphanage.
Yo, got it.
But Elon's actually doing that.
Well, I mean, he's not sending them to the orphanage.
Well, because he can afford to keep all of them.
But it, I mean, his whole thing about the natalist movement and decline
in population.
No, wait.
I don't want us
population.
To jump off this yet. You said in Iceland. Yeah.
Yes.
They are now going to eradicate the possibility of you having a child with an extra chromosome, the mongoloid, or I know that's rude, but Down syndrome. Right. There's a problem with dwarves
little
as well.
People.
Well, yes, dwarves, little people. Again, I use the wrong terminology, but people know what I mean. when you say little people, that could be just people who are short.
Okay, so there's a
I don't like this little people. Like the guy from Game of Thrones is a dwarf.
We're going down a
they're less path, but there are fewer. Let me get this right. Ooh. There are fewer dwarves being born now because
why is that?
They're finding out in the womb, and you know they do the
genetic testing, and then they terminate the pregnancies.
What do they call it with the
scans? Like a
no, but the needle, and they do a little.
Mm.
That kind of thing.
The amniotic fluid. And then
that's the one. They find out that the kid is a dwarf. And then because these days people have a different take on, you know, when life is sacred and when it isn't, which is up to them. I'm not going to get into that whole discussion. But then they decide they elect not to have the child who's the dwarf. And I feel like I don't like this.
No.
I think it's very important that we have some regard for the sacredness of life.
I mean, this is such a fascinating discussion because gene and embryo editing is
it's going to happen, right?
It's already happening to an extent.
But then the counter argument to my position is if you can eliminate the chance of someone to end up with a congenital disease that will ravage them in their old age or even at a young age, you should morally be in favor of editing that gene out. Mm.
It's a slippery slope, though, because that same technology would allow you to dictate, you know, length, you know, IQ, eye color, all of that stuff. And so the concern is that, you know, the super rich are going to use this to create super smart people and that, you know.
They already have by breeding.
I guess.
That's
what
they've done.
Yeah. I guess that's
what the European aristocracy before they became degenerate. That's what their whole purpose was. It was like they'd worked out that if you breed this dog with that dog, you get a better, stronger dog.
Yeah, but I mean, all of the incest in terms of with themselves.
Sure,
that
I mean,
was
the Habsburgs at the end, it was a disaster. But for a long time, they had worked out that, okay, this guy seems to be a pretty smart king in Bohemia, and he has 3 daughters. I'm marrying those 3 daughters to my 3
sons.
But
the interesting argument is there was a guy who tried this experiment, or there was this movement. He wanted to bring all of the Nobel laureates and sort of have them, I don't know, donate their sperm or breed in a different way. And, and those kids were not necessarily super smart. Again, it comes back to like what ensures intelligence.
I don't think you can ensure it. It's exactly half nature and half nurture.
Yeah.
You know, if you see someone who has been raised with very few resources, but they are genuinely curious and they read everything from food packets.
I mean, look at J.D. Vance. He's kind of that. I mean,
right? Exactly. Yeah. Everybody, you know, kind of mocks him for his very humble origins.
And I would challenge you to watch or to read
His book.
His book and not Hillbilly, be an emotional. Yeah, Hillbilly Elegy. And not be an emotional wreck after that. I mean, his life story.
He's an impressive guy, hey? Mm. And everybody's very focused on Trump. But we've got to remember that in
like he's next, probably,
two, right? 3 years, Trump's out and then it all changes and he'll.
I think we'll miss the humor, though. And I don't want it to come back.
They talk about entertaining.
Yeah. I find you begrudgingly laugh every time he does a little skit. You know, when he did that whole thing about Melania saying she doesn't like him dancing and then he does the dance and he does the whole, you know, transgender powerlifting thing.
He's very – he started off in entertainment. He's a TV guy, right? We would probably – have the most fascinating conversations with him about his show, The Apprentice, all that other TV. He was the guest that every talk show wanted to book because he was so damned open,
entertaining.
Honest, entertaining, credible, and smart.
Yeah.
And then America got what it wanted. It got an entertainer for a president, and now half of them are not sure they want it.
It's now putting the genie back into that bottle. I mean, and who's next? There really is no one that can operate on that level. I don't know. Entertaining.
I mean, thought for a little while that there was a chance that this would just become like an endless wheel of celebrities.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Oprah was also sort of mentioned.
Oprah was touted. The Michelle Obama, although I don't know if she would be very entertaining. Have you seen all she's doing at the moment is going around complaining about Barack?
Oh, really? Complaining about him?
You can get her on your show. She'll go on any show. And then she sits saying, oh, my life is so hard. This is
People
easily,
don't believe that. Yeah.
She's one of the luckiest women in the world. No one would know who she was if she hadn't married Barack Obama. Sure, she's terrific, and I'm sure she could stand on her own 2 feet. And if she hadn't met him, she wouldn't have been a disaster. But the reason we know her is because she married him and because she was the first lady.
Yes,
she was. I mean
Melania, have you watched the documentary?
No, have you?
No, I've just watched snippets. I'm very intrigued.
I got to watch it.
I think she's such a fascinating person.
By the way, in this country where they decided they weren't going to show it at any cinemas, they have missed a major gold mine.
And everyone doubted it's some kind of victory.
Do you know how well it's done in America? It has shot the lights out. Everybody said, it's going to be a disaster.
Mm, Pyongyang level propaganda. No one said this is supposed to be anything else than an entertainment.
You don't even have to like Donald Trump to be fascinated with Melania. There are people who've been breaking down the minute details of what first ladies wear for like 50 years who couldn't tell you anything about the Democrats or Republicans. Mm. But there's a group of people who would be interested in this, and I think it's probably quite worth watching.
I think so too. And people talk about like process porn. It's like the build up to all of the big events and her sort of finalizing her outfits or, you know, gala dinners and whatever like that. I find that so fascinating.
She's largely an unknown quantity. Huh?
She's done really well.
She's kept everybody at just the right distance. We don't know that much about her.
No, we don't. And that's amazing. I think
for a first lady, I mean, what don't we know about Hillary Clinton? We know the details of all her emails. We know everything, right?
That's a whole different.
And I don't know that I ever wanted to know this much about Hillary Clinton, but we do.
Yeah.
And she's surly and she's salty and she's kind of grumpy with everybody and she's obviously pissed off with Bill.
But talk about like the massive.
But we don't know anything about Melania.
The revolution in like those. The political class. Trump came in and all of those traditional politicians have become obsolete in a way.
Absolutely
like you cannot compete
right. You
with
are
him anymore.
So right.
I think it happened so quickly.
And they're not dealing with it well, huh?
They are not, no.
I mean, listen, the Clintons are still relevant, but not because of their politics.
Yeah. Are we going to talk about the Epstein?
Because of Epstein. So are you interested in this at all? Because it seems to me that every time I go, really, this is such a – because it is a bunch of hysteria.
Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do about it. And most of the girls are now much, much older and we can't get them any kind of – unless we know names and we know places and we have evidence
and convictions.
People can be prosecuted.
But, I mean, who are we going to convict the dead guy?
So then otherwise it just ends up gossip, right? Yeah. And a lot of what frustrates me about these Epstein files is that most of it is gossip. I am horrified at the amount of influence he was wielding.
How was that possible?
Over Mandelson –
everyone.
I saw Gordon Brown had to hand in a 5-page report to exonerate himself from all of this. This is a former prime minister who I'd forgotten was even alive.
Yeah. But how terrible is that picture of Mandelson in his underwear?
Oh, embarrassing.
Who took all of those pictures? And they I mean, yeah, you see Andrew looking into the camera on all fours on that. I'm like, how are you?
So embarrassing. So what do you think the ultimate end game is going to be here? Do you think it's just going to be a bit of sensation and then we'll move on like we always do?
I think just the disillusionment with the elites is just going to, deepen, politicians, all of them.
They're losing credibility hand over fist. Mm.
So I think it's going to go that way. People are going to look for a savior and I don't know where it's going to come from. Maybe not even politics. And to talk about what's truth and is it becoming more and more difficult to tell the truth? I don't think so. I think people have built belief systems, and that goes to sort of in a religious direction. And I'm religious, but there's an element of suspending, what is true and what's not, because you just don't know when it comes to belief and religion. You cannot view truth through that lens, and I think that's dangerous. So it's become like, what do I feel? Do I feel this is true, and do I feel this is my truth, and all of that? And that's tricky. That's difficult. I think that's very problematic. I don't know how we come back from that.
You speak to so many smart people all the time about.
I'm now.
No, I mean in your job. You talk to brilliant people who can see their way through the woods. They can figure out what's going to happen next. They can and most of them, I think we take quite seriously. Otherwise, yep. You wouldn't give them a platform. You'd think, well, this person's just a bit of a joke. What is your overall, having distilled and condensed all of the information you have in the last, let's say, 2 or 3 years, what do you think is the most likely outcome for what we're going through in this country? Because we're going through our own stretches and growing pains and yawns and problems. And in some ways, we're still a very infant country.
Mm.
Our politics can be very childish, very personality-based, very party-based, very simplistic. The GNU, which is, I don't know whether it's a success or not. I don't know what you could call it. It's probably better than the alternative.
Mm.
But what are we comparing ourselves to? And would you like to raise your son here? And what kind of a world do you think you're going to be bringing him up in?
Well, absolutely. I'm very positive about South Africa. And I think we're on a fantastic wicket. I think there's a big danger of us trying to import. And I mean, we've been speaking about American issues and politics now for a long time. So we're guilty of that as well. Mm. But I think there's a danger of importing that way of looking at the world. But in a way, I also think that we've sort of seen that now, and we know that that doesn't work in terms of Trump's focus on South Africa recently. And the only thing that's actually come of that is higher tariffs, which applies to other countries as well. We haven't actually been punished to the extent that he's been threatening us.
No, he doesn't. I think he thinks about us very much.
No, exactly. No, we're not on his radar anymore. But I think there's a danger of doing that. And I think, we never do the best thing, but we never do the worst thing either. That's sort of the South African story. And talk about, smart people. There's a big mentor of mine, Tim du Plessis, former editor.
He's great.
Commentator. And he just has this sobering way of looking at these things, because he'll always remind me that, this is not the biggest crisis we've faced. This isn't the closest we've come to the edge. We always manage to bring it back it's not because of our political leaders. It's because of everyday South Africans. And just, your interaction with your fellow South Africans every day, that gives me hope. It's never on the level of people engaging on social media. It's never that.
No, reasonable. I completely never that toxic. Agree with that. Yeah.
And I remind myself as well, social media is not real life. I mean, I think the most recent study was 7% of South Africans are on X. If you are online, constantly online, the EFF would be the biggest party in parliament.
Yeah.
The DA would have 3% support. And again, that's not where we are now. And I think the GNU has been a success. I think it's shown us that there's life after one party dominance. We've only ever known as a country. And so that's opened up new possibilities. Obviously, again, not without its challenges, but
sure. There's
new stuff shown to us. And it's a way of, we have a way of finding solutions to complex problems, which, again, it's becoming more and more difficult for other countries. I actually believe we've gone past that as South Africans. We've proved to ourselves that we can do this. It's sort of like, this is an easy game for us. We are a very complicated society.
But resilient as
resilient, well. And we found a way to make it work. It's not perfect. And the things that other societies are grappling with now, multiculturalism, diversity.
We've been through that.
We've been through it. We've been having it. Oh, I love that.
No, it's true. I think that everything you've just said, I completely endorse. Not just because coming from you, and you do mostly know what you're talking about, but because this is a place where I think people, we have deep wells of experience to draw on.
Yeah.
And really, the average South African you will meet in the street is terrific.
Yeah.
They're funny. They don't take everything super seriously. Sure, they've got struggles and concerns. They have real deep-seated concerns when it comes to things like crime and corruption.
Poverty
and service delivery and all. Those are very real things.
Yeah.
But they, even in spite of all those things, they're still happy to be around and will always give you the benefit of the doubt, will always smile, will always treat you. It's very seldom that I've ever encountered ugliness and negativity in real life.
No, I mean, neither I.
In this country. Anywhere else in the world, sure. You know, you just have to meet the people at the airports in any other country.
I know, go through passport control.
Horribly sad, grumpy people. Not South Africa.
I think this is probably now, given where the world is, and it's very precarious in terms of, you know, conflicts and level of tension in certain areas. I think this is perhaps the best country in the world to be in.
We're just far enough that if they all behave very badly, we'll be okay.
Exactly, yeah. No, it's
all right, well, listen, you keep doing the excellent work that you're doing. We need this. We need people who are competent and professional in the world of journalism and particularly television journalism. Here's Masego, who says, congrats on all the SAFTA nominations. Very nice.
And Gesprek, nominated for SAFTA in a little short film. We wrote and directed. It was also nominated, Marisa Laaste Dag, which has a political element to it.
Good. Well, congrats. I didn't know about that. Masego, thank you. That's very, very good. Glad you threw that in there. And we will catch up soon.
And please come on my show again.
Yeah, I will.
I'll twist your arm.
It's lots of fun. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Have an awesome Friday. We will see you next week. Because I'm doing one show a week. I couldn't. This three show a week for five shows.
What do you do with the rest of your time?
Oh, so much. So many things.
Reading.
I've never been bored in my life.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. No, I've got so many things to do. I'm like, going to get out of here as soon as I can because I've got a ton of stuff to do.
Okay, go do the stuff. Yeah,
and you?
Same, yeah. No, yeah. I mean,
got to keep busy, man. I never sit there and go, I think I'll have a sleep. Doesn't happen.
Okay.
Sleep when I'm dead.
What do you enjoy doing for fun?
Really? We're going to have this conversation. I've already shut down the show.
Oh.
Have you guys pressed stop? What do I do for fun?
Yeah.
I do lots of things. So I paint, I draw,
really?
I write, I read.
A Renaissance man.
Well, I don't know if I'm good at all those things. That's in the eye of the beholder.
Well, George Bush is also a painter.
And he's pretty good.
He is actually. I like his stuff.
I have a laboratory at home. I study heraldry, genealogy, medieval weapons.
Yeah.
Got a collection of those.
Do
coins.
You wield them at all?
I'm a numismatist. So I've got a whole collection of coins. I have obviously.
Oh, Gareth, you look great for an 80-year-old.
Yeah, I do. A lot of my stuff is very 80-year-old. I do interesting and cool stuff too.
I love that none of that involves technology.
I go to gym. Tonight I'm having supper with a friend of mine. She's in town from Cape Town. I haven't seen her for a while. So busy, man. Oh. I got shit to do.
No, that sounds
people
amazing.
To see, places to go.
Yep. Sounds great.
No rest for the wicked either.
Oh.
Lorenzo Eckhart, everybody. We will we'll catch up with you soon. And yes, thanks, I will come on your show. You just
great.
All right, awesome. Be good. Bye.